participate in a Don and Mike Show contest? How about this? You or a member of your household can only win once for 60 days. You must comply with any age limitations for each contest. For complete contest rules, send a self-addressed stamp envelope to the mighty WJFK, P.O. Box 3649, Washington, D.C., 20007. Thank you, and God bless.
Don and Mike, there'll be no mollycoddling.
Will you see if your mom can give my resume to Dennis Phillips? Because if I could get in a Broadway show, then I would have done it all. Film, television, and theater. The only thing left to be radio. That's just for ugly people.
Bob in Westchester. How are you, Bob?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, thank you.
First, I want to say that I never missed a show, and I really appreciate it.
Wow, that's listening.
And I just want to say that I really appreciate the topic you're covering this morning regarding full-blown AIDS and the fact that just because people lead a lifestyle that where they get the full-blown AIDS, it doesn't mean they're going to HE double hockey stick just because they've, you know, gotten the full-blown AIDS either from having an unclean taint or from being BM eaters on the Don and Mike Show. And I think that it really is interesting that although I believe I am going to HE double hockey sticks just for...
Well, anyway, we hope that some interesting people... Well, anyway, we've been dealing...
this episode deals with the inappropriateness of racial invectives and contains coarse racial slurs. Viewer discretion is advised.
Everybody loves Don and Mike.
Hey, kids, could I talk to you for about 30 seconds? This is Elvis Presley. I ask you to listen. Now here's a song.
And yes, the rumors are true. They smoke, they drink, they use bad language in mixed company. They're extremely rich and they can flash more bling than most hockeys in this. Rock stars they are, and God bless them for that.
I gotta tell you some of the inside doings
at Infinity Broadcast. Yeah. The pettiest company in the world.
Oh, they're the pettiest.
Now, just as a bit of background, everybody listening last week when he had the thing with death.
Wasn't that Thursday we had that major meltdown, right?
Remember that? Okay. I'm not going to go through all the details again. I hope that you are listening to the beginning, to the end, and every second of the show Thursday so you know about the death.
I certainly hope people will.
I would also like to point out that since that program, I saw Ken Stevens on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Ken Stevens on the telephone on Monday before I came into work.
Right.
And I saw Ken Stevens Monday, which was yesterday, here at the radio station.
Ken seemed to be in a very jovial mood yesterday.
No. Ken has never mentioned one word about the entire desk incident
to me. Sure.
Because remember, while this was unfolding,
right,
Ken was in his office.
Mm-hmm.
But he was aware of what was happening.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
So, it's dead, right? It's water under the bridge. We've got the desk. Things worked out great.
We kind of put it in the win column. We chalked it up to another overwhelming victory, and we went about our business, and we've got a lovely desk in the office.
Coming in today, pick up the phone, talking to the assistant producer, saying, yeah, listen, blah, 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 blah. You know, we booked Joe Frazier as a guest on the program.
I'm excited about that.
You know, we got the DJ magazine in the mail today, and oh, yes... Miss Bobby, who is the wonderful business manager here,
right,
went back to Rob and said, incidentally, the station has no intent in paying for that desk.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So who will?
Well, it was kind of implied that that we'd pay for it. And I said no. Yes, yes. A question from the front row.
Yeah, Mr. Geronimo.
Yes.
I believe the desk was delivered to the business location of WJFK. It was not delivered to personal individuals. It was delivered to the business. Therefore, we are not liable to pay for the desk.
The quote was, to be exactly honest with you, the quote from Miss Bobby to Rob A was, the station has no desire to pay for the desk.
Ah. Oh,
so
well,
I went back and
desire,
I said, well, I don't have a desire to pay for the desk either.
It's a matter of principle. They stole our desk.
Station doesn't desire to pay the electric bill, but they kind of have to.
Then she said to me, well, there's an easy way around this. Just return the desk.
Yeah, and of course, what does that leave us with? No desk.
Plus, it's a beautiful desk. Plus, it's a desk that we fought for. It's a desk that, respect-wise, we deserve. I felt last Thursday, can I tell you, I'm going to say something right now that all of you dames can relate to. All of you tomatoes wearing your tight clothes, and you got your boobs there, and you got your butt sticking out. You paint yourself up real nice.
Right.
I'm talking now to the ladies in the audience. You know who I felt like? I felt like Norma Rae.
Yeah, there you go.
That's who I felt like. And I say that to all of you lovely lovelies who are listening to the program right now.
All the Norma Rae-like lovelies that resembled Norma Rae when she was all sweaty, standing up there holding that sign in the middle of the factory that said Union.
Right.
Remember that? Remember that made me cry, that scene. Of course, I cry easily at movies.
Yeah, Rudy. Yeah. Every woman, of course, can relate to the Norma Rae story.
Of course.
And that is how we felt last Thursday. We felt triumphant, as if we were walking through that sweatshop saying, yes.
Yeah, and not only, it was, you know, really, when we do something like this, and I don't want to make this sound like more than it is, but when we do something like that, we have fun, we think it's great radio, but, you know, there's a little bit of both of us that really feels like we are taking on the man for everybody out there that can't take on the man, that is afraid to do that, and we do it, and we get away with it, and we win those battles, and we feel good about it.
Right. And then they're sneaky about it.
Yeah, they're gutless about it.
You know, and when I'm coming in today, Shrinsky says to me, one of the sales guys, I'm walking in. Now, keep in mind, I've already had the phone call that right. I know the station is saying they have, quote, no desire to pay for the desk.
Sure.
So I come in already with a little bit of a scowl on my face, and Shrinsky says, hey, Donnie, I need your help, man. You know, he's in that Tom Arnold-type mode.
Right.
Yeah. Dave, I need your help, man. They took my couch out of my office. So I need you to go to Al to get me a new couch, man. Come on, do it, man. And I just looked at him. I gave him that look with my head cocked like a dog.
Yeah.
And I walked away. And then about an hour later, he came up to me and he said, "Hey, listen, I'm sorry. Of course, the word has obviously now gotten around the station." He said, I didn't realize that they were going to make you pay for the desk.
And what a surprise. They can't come to us with that. We have to find that out on our own and go to Miss Bobby with that. But it certainly gets around the station very quick, doesn't it?
Rattle, frazzle, reason. Let's call the delightful Miss Bobby.
If she answers the phone.
I think she will.
We'll see what happens.
I had a good chat with her today.
Let's call her new number.
We will if we can't get through.
Okay. See, I'm loving it. I just proved myself I'm loving it more than you are.
Slow down on that.
Hello.
Here she is now. Hello, Bobby.
The lovely Miss Bobby. Miss Bobby, so good to hear your wonderful voice again.
Isn't it?
Hi, B.
Hi.
Hi.
Those jerks putting you on point for this, I think that's totally unfair that they're making you be the bad person.
What's new?
Can you tell us who it was who ordered you to tell us that the station had no desire to pay for the desk?
Let me see. I did discuss it with Rob A. since Rob A. had the best company call me. That's what got me involved in the first place.
Oh, Rob had them call you.
Mm-hmm, directly. Mm-hmm.
You know, Miss Bobby, I would think that if you talk to the best company, you could probably negotiate a handsome price for that desk.
Hold on.
We should, because it was like a used desk in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Here comes Rob A. Spiewak now.
Hi, guys. Hi, beautiful. How you doing?
Hello, Rob A.
In my own defense, remember, it was Alan who was the instigator when all of this started, and 'twas Alan who said Miss Bobby was the one.
Yeah, but it wasn't Alan who had the best company call me directly.
No, but Alan did say, what are you saying here, Rob? I'm trying to back you up.
I spoke to Alan after the desk.
I don't think you can back him up.
Alan said what?
I spoke to Alan after the desk was dropped off, and Alan said, well, they're going to have to deal with Miss Bobby, or Miss Bobby is going to have to talk about it.
Color's coming into his cheeks. He's getting serious now.
Thanks for the support.
No problem at all. No problem. I'm here to help you.
Thank you.
Miss Bobby didn't know that. As it turns out, during my discussion with Miss Bobby today, there were some parts that she didn't know. For instance, she did not know, she had not been listening to the show during the point when we had Alan on the air,
right,
when we discussed that we'd had a discussion before the show where Rob was talking to him about the desk, and I said,
right,
Al, don't take that desk, that's our desk.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also news to Miss Bobby.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Did not know that.
No.
She did not know that.
Mm-mm.
You know, I'm thinking if we went to every salesperson, how much would it cost to get the collection of...
$50 each.
$50 each.
Well,
and
there you go.
For their $50, they each get to mention their favorite client.
Well, actually, it would be less than that.
Would it be less than that?
How much would it be, Bobby?
Let me see. What is the total?
Watch this human computer. $530.
And not that we're definitely going to do this because you haven't given the word to do it yet, Don. But I'll tell you this. I'll tell you that if the sales...
There's only $26.50 a salesperson.
And the salespeople that didn't do it, that didn't participate.
Uh-huh.
How much would that be for each salesperson?
$26.50. That's a deal.
Yeah. You know, that's one of their two martini lunches.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's, you know, that's easy for them. That's
standard. All right.
That's pin money for them.
All right, I'll call and see if we get a response. Although something tells me we won't get a wholehearted effort from them. Being as just last week on the program, I pointed out that the station could survive without us, but not without them, that of anybody who was replaceable, they were the replaceable ones.
Don, don't sell yours as a salesman short. I think you can sell this.
But wait a minute. Hold on. I would like to just point out again, though.
Yes.
Alan told us to buy a desk.
That's right.
You know, hold on. Let's not get past that fact.
That is a factoid.
Before we start trying to troll the salespeople for money. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time, gorgeous.
No, okay, dear.
Miss Bobby, right. Would you be like? Would you have any interest in contributing to the desk fund?
Not really.
Would you grace us with just one moment of Roseanne? Would you just say, "Oh, John," or
yeah? And as a matter of fact, maybe
Dan, whatever his name is on the show.
As Roseanne, you could tell the salespeople to. You know, to cough up the dust.
Pay the money.
Well, you salespeople are the one that started this in the first place, and you should cough up the damn $26.50.
Yeah!
Perfect. Bravo!
Yes. Okay, she's our Rosie. Bye, Miss Bobby.
All right.
Bye-bye. She's our Roseanne.
Yes, yeah, she is. Yeah. And the rating show, she's doing a super job of it.
Let me call Alan. No, he's here. Be willing to take this call.
Hiding under his desk right now.
Yeah, I'm sure Ken has ordered him never to go on the air with us again.
Please.
And Ken, unavailable today.
Well, is that unusual?
Yeah, you ask, where is Ken? Nobody knows where he is today. He's not at any of the radio stations.
He's listening to a steel band right now.
Hello?
Hello.
Alan.
God, Alan, you do that impression of Ken Stevens so perfectly.
I've been working on it.
Hi there.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Boy, I tell you, there's a trepidation in your voice right now, Alan.
I don't know. Don's been giving me a scowl for the last 3 days, so.
Well, listen, and that scowl would have went away if not for today. You know, making us pay for that desk.
Well, I really had nothing to do with that.
Have you heard our little idea, Al?
No, what is it?
Oh, it's a great idea. Al, it's an idea that makes everybody happy and benefits your sales force enormously.
Well, I have a feeling I'm going to have it run by me, huh?
Go ahead, run by your idea. Go ahead.
Go ahead, let's hear it.
All right, the idea is that each of these fabulous salespeople that you've accumulated, all 300 of them, or how many we have here, kick in a paltry $26.50 for the desk. And then in turn for that $26.50, they get to mention their favorite client on this show, this most powerful of shows on WJFK here in Washington, D.C.
Wow, so they actually get something in return.
Absolutely. Plus the goodwill that could last a lifetime. Now, you know, this is a one-time-only offer.
Something tells me, now, I must also say that something tells me that the salespeople will not go into this unless they are told to.
Yeah, well, that's why we are talking to Alan right now.
And furthermore, I think that, Al, that you should be the guy here that says, okay, I said you could buy the desk. The money's coming from the sales department. So you have two options to go.
Yeah, and that's really more options than you should have, Alan.
I'm giving you the option, you know, be a stand-up guy.
Right.
Say, listen, guys, I'm the one that said it, and we do have the tapes. I'm the one that said, go ahead and buy the desk.
And my option would be to mobilize that wonderful sales trooper force that you have there.
Which helps you to save a little face, but...
And also, you know, some goodwill with your clients.
Free
plugs and everybody wins.
Doesn't do a lot, though, to fix the animosity between ourselves and the sales department.
No.
And I'm talking about... From the sales department's standpoint.
Yeah, well, but it also gives us an idea to know who's on the team.
Well, it does give the sales department an opportunity to take a moment or two to speak of our wonderful client.
Simply a mention, that's all, though.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking
an opening, it can't be...
No, 5 seconds or less.
$26.50, are you kidding me?
Well, you know, what does $26.50 get us? I guess that's what I'm going to have to
do. You can say the name of a client.
Okay.
That's a client mention.
Well, I've also got... Are we into the idea mode? Because I've got an option.
No.
Well, hold on. Yeah.
No, Don, don't let him do it.
I'm not saying I'm going to agree with him.
Okay.
Let's hear what he has to say. Right.
Bottom line is, you know how valuable your airtime is on the radio station.
Coincidentally, we do.
Okay. It's very valuable, which I don't know why I'm on at this point, but for advertisers, it's very, very valuable. Whoever brought the desk, I think you gave them a few mentions, didn't you?
Al, this is a stupid, stupid idea.
Well, they've already
this
gotten...
This is a stupid idea.
They've already
no,
gotten...
No, 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 no. You should take responsibility, you said, by the desk.
You have more options than you should have. You have two.
Yeah, I did say by
either,
the desk.
Okay.
So I did say by the desk. I buy that desk.
Well,
I mean, that's
too bad. And furthermore...
The nicest desk in the...
Furthermore, when that desk was delivered... Let's see, here's the whole problem with this station. Here's the problem. When that desk was delivered, if you or Ken or any of the other guys who are hiding in the back listening to the show didn't want the desk, you should have had some balls and come out to the lobby and say, listen, guys, we don't accept this desk. Instead, what do? It's the P-Way out again. It's the big P-Way that you guys, you get the desk. You bring it in, we got it for 3 days, we make it our own, and then you go the pussy way of going and making Bobby tell us to pay for it.
Well, I didn't make anybody say anything.
Well, how come nobody bothered to come out to say don't accept the desk when it was delivered?
That's right.
When we knew you guys were listening.
That's right.
There.
Answer that, Alan.
How come?
Well, number one, I didn't know how much it was.
I don't care if it's just the principle of the thing. The desk is the desk.
Well, and you know what? If it were a $100 desk, maybe it would be a different situation.
But it's not. I think we're worth a $500 desk.
And you know what? I agree with you. I do.
Good.
Good. So
there's no argument there.
Good. Then which option are you going to take?
You have two options.
Well, you
pay for it out of the sales budget. Or
what sales budget?
Again,
I don't have a sales budget.
What do you want from me?
Rubber biscuit.
I wish I had a sales budget.
Well, then if you have to, out of your own pocket. You know what I mean? You're making an investment in your future here.
Oh, that would be. I can't even begin to tell you the goodwill that would.
Out of your own pocket. You know, we would say, look at this. It's a desk that Alan bought for us.
We would be your guys, Alan. We're talking. I mean, just loads of goodwill.
Well, let me tell you personally, I would actually put in more than the sales staff,
uh-huh,
just so I could move this situation off my plate and go on to the next thing.
Well, that's Laura.
I would actually put more money in than any of my salespeople.
Then you put in $300.
But,
you get the salespeople.
Much money.
All right, so you put in $250, and then it's up to you to get the salespeople to get the other $283 together.
No, here's the problem. I've got about 20 salespeople, and I would almost guarantee, although they all love your show, they're salespeople, and I don't think they're going to want to pay a penny.
Mm. Well, then, for goodness sakes, I don't know what the solution to the problem is then, Alan. I don't know what the solution is. What do you think? We're not paying for it. Yeah, we're not letting you take it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, what was the final word that you heard? Because all I heard was...
The word I heard was that the station was not going to pay for it.
But it matters financial as far as spending money. Who makes the final
decision?
If
you have an emergency today and you have to write a check for $500...
I would go to Bobby.
So you are then the second in command.
Our fearless leader, Ken Stevens, who needs to be presented.
Ken Stevens, who has not said one word about this to me.
I don't know where Ken is today.
No, not only today, but...
You know, I know for a fact, Alan, that Ken probably is extraordinarily busy, would hate to have this put on his desk again. This is the type of petty, and I mean capital P,
petty
thing that he wouldn't want to deal with.
This is Richard Petty, this is Tom Petty. And Kyle Petty, that's the third Petty I was trying to think of, the trio of Petties.
Yeah, Al, you're the one that could make this go away and everybody would be
Petticoat Junction.
Petticoat Junction what?
Oh, no, I thought you were Petty.
No, you're not playing those games.
No.
Okay.
We're not on good terms yet. We haven't solved this
right
problem.
Right now we're talking on a Ouija board because we're talking to a guy who's dead. At least a guy who's dead to this program.
Guy who has a golden opportunity to come back to life, though.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I can't do it alone. I've got 20 people.
Well, then I'd say by the close of business today, 5:30? 5:30 East Coast time, close of business? You know, Al, you know, I wasn't going to mention anything about this, but you are aware that we are negotiating a contract now with Infinity, a new contract.
Yes, sir.
And goodwill should abound in those situations.
Sure. What's a desk? What's a desk to keep the two clowns happy?
Hey, listen.
What's a desk to keep the two guys happy?
Especially
you
when
walk
Wright is
all over anyway.
Especially when Wright is on their side.
Yeah, the funny thing is, though, when you got the desk the other day, you didn't seem too happy with the sales department after that.
I'm not.
We're still not, but we could be.
But how could you be when you weren't 4 days ago when you had the desk?
Because we are that fickle. We're petty. Remember that word, Alan?
Petty. We're very petty.
We're the pettiest.
We're artists, man.
You make this desk thing go away, and all of a sudden, you got the two happiest guys in the world.
Right.
We'll come back there, shake everybody's hand, except for Goldstein.
And Melanie.
Yeah.
Well,
it's such an easy problem.
See? Such...
I don't know what to tell you other than...
I tell you what, then. You know what we do?
Yes, sir.
We give that desk back today if you give us your desk. Now, that's the easiest way out, Al. If a desk means so little...
Alan, I believe I've just heard option number three.
You give us your desk, and we will return that desk to Best today.
I've got a great option.
Those are the three options. You pay...
Well, can I throw one more option in? Just one more.
Only because I'm as lenient as Ito. Yes, go ahead.
Originally, the option was, can we borrow it until we get another desk?
This option
and actually,
is thrown
you
out.
Took that ball and ran with it and got another desk.
No. You took our desk and pilfered it down the hallway right in front of us
while we were on the air.
While we were on the air.
Man, your short-term memory is no good.
And you forget the conversation that we had about that desk before we went on the air. And I ask you this, of all of the other people that worked for Infinity Broadcasting, and I can think of a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Can you picture the Infinity Broadcasting taking a piece of their belongings and walking by the window with it while they're on the air? No, of course not.
Because
you give everybody else in this company a little bit of respect.
But I wouldn't have done it if I didn't have somebody who said I could move it down the hall.
Then who said you could move it down the hall?
Well, I thought that's been known. I mean, Jeremy and I had this conversation.
Ah, there's the name of Jeremy.
All right, now wait a minute. Now, are you selling out Jeremy?
I'm not selling out Jeremy.
No, hold on.
I would not move somebody's desk.
Honest up, then. Let's just listen.
I would not move somebody's desk.
Did you roll over for Jeremy last week?
Did I roll over for Jeremy?
What I mean is, last week...
Did I take a bullet for him?
Yes.
Yeah, was he the culprit in this all along? You can be honest with him.
Did he give you the okay to come back and get the desk?
I hate being a stoolie here.
Oh, that's a
did
yes.
Did he or not?
Alan is off the hook.
The drama unfolds.
Wow, we have to look to our own. I cannot believe this.
Okay, listen. Understand. Thank you.
So maybe Jeremy will pay for the desk.
All right, listen. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you're off the hook.
Yeah, have a nice day, Alan.
Hey, you're a good guy.
You should have just come to me and said, listen, it's the worm, you know. The leader of the straw boss of the Jeremy Ranch said, go ahead and take it.
The guy that's never given us any respect.
So I can get back to work now?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, enjoy. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye. See ya. All right. Well.
Yeah, we got some fish to fry.
And that son of a gun, he was back there telling me how much he thought that it was not only a good bit and good radio,
right.
but how much we didn't deserve to have that desk taken away.
Oh, the snake!
Do we know where he is today? Hey, Rob, do we know where he is today?
Where's Jeremy?
He's working on another show right now.
Is he working on the Grease Man show?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Is there a number where we can reach him?
Yes, speed dial 1134.
Okay, a quick break, and we'll be right back. Keeping in mind, they're taking away our desk. They're taking away our desk, and they want us to pay for it. You know what? You could finance that desk with one of his trips to Atlanta or Los Angeles.
Absolutely.
To try to fix the Grease Man show. Which can't be fixed. We'll be right back. It's Mad Men. Alan Linewand is the happiest man on the face of the earth. He might as well have just won the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweep.
Practically doing cartwheels down the hallway.
Saw him smile real big.
I hated to do it. Oh, yeah, it's written all over your face. You hated to sell Jeremy out.
All right, let's call Jeremy.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, who apparently has authorized the theft of the desk that belongs to this program.
Jeremy, who is the head of the supposed programming department here.
Who should be supporting his people.
Sold out by one of our own.
Welcome to 1-800-ASK-4-ASK.
I really thought we were calling.
Okay, now I'm calling him. For butt action.
Ask for ass.
All right, let's get to... What's that trainer's name?
How the hell do we do this every day anyway?
What's that guy's name? You know,
Benedict Arnold.
Yes, thanks.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey.
Oh, this is Don Geronimo, Mike O'Mara. We're doing a radio show right now. We're looking for Jeremy Coleman.
Jeremy has stepped... Well, let me try and page him. Hold on just a second.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Charles Broyhill with the history tippin'.
Man, here I am. The first name I'm coming up with is Benjamin.
Man.
Second, I know it's not Benjamin Franklin who is the big trader.
Well, that's good. That's terrific. I understand you only like to fly on Qantas Airlines, too.
Hello?
Right?
Hello, Jeremy.
I do not believe he lied like that.
Ooh, I see somebody has tipped you off.
No, I was listening. You're on a satellite. I like your show. He is out and out lying.
Man, where are you, Jeremy? Are you in Atlanta?
Yep.
Gee, you weren't listening to over-the-air radio down there, right?
No, no, he could listen on a satellite feed down there.
Kind of bringing up the fact that we should be on in Atlanta.
Oh, well, one thing at a time.
Sorry about that. You know, my tanks are running.
So you're saying that Alan Linewand is lying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I never talked to him about the desk before it was taken out of its place. And, in fact, that day was the day that I spent all day getting my car towed. I didn't even get to the radio station until after he'd already taken it.
Hold on. You know what? Wait a minute. God, it pains me to say this. This man is not lying.
He wasn't even here?
This man, as a matter of fact, told me in great detail why his car was not here. He parked his car in the wrong side of town.
Right.
Broke the windows in his car, and that is true. He was not in the building.
We need to get Alan Linewand in here. We got to get him on the line to find out to answer these charges.
Oh, God.
He says you were responsible. You gave authorization on taking that desk away, and that's not true? Jeremy?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, Jeremy.
Okay. Well, then please accept my humble apology.
Jeremy, at any time during the day's events, were you apprised of the desk situation?
Yeah, I listened to it, and everyone was talking about it in the halls.
And you thought it was great radio?
Before I got to the radio station?
Yeah.
No.
See, and what I remember from Jeremy is I saw him in the hall and talked to him about the desk, and he said, it's great. The whole thing with the desk is great.
Oh, I thought it was fantastic.
Jeremy, you know, you're aware of the fact...
And I thought it was even more fantastic. It had absolutely nothing to do with me.
You know, Jeremy, they want us to pay for the desk now. What do you think the situation... Here comes Alan Linewand.
Okay.
Here comes Alan.
Here you want confrontation, folks. Welcome to the Geraldo Show.
Here it is. Go ahead, fellas.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hello.
Jeremy?
Hi.
I got a question for you.
Yes?
Did I not come up to you the afternoon that this whole thing started and Rob had just had a conversation with me about the desk and I said to you, you had just come in, you were just getting your messages, I guess you were going into your office, but we talked in the lobby and you said to me, what's going on? I said, hey, listen, Rob says that desk has to stay for XYZ. Are you okay with that? And you looked at me and said, yes. You could have that desk. No problem with that desk. It's your desk.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, Jeremy. Jeremy, come on.
Wait, and
I'll go one step further. That was the second conversation we had. The first conversation we had was probably 2 weeks earlier when I was going to order a desk for our salesperson or director of sports sales, whatever we call it.
Right.
And I came back and I said, hey, are there any desks around? And
Hold on, let him testify, please.
I'm on the. I would swear on a stack of Bibles right now.
I know what the next.
I don't know if you would, Jeremy. But
I know what the next step is too. After this finishes.
Oh yes, yes.
We got to find us some witnesses.
So what I then did is I went to you because you were again in the lobby. You seem to be in the lobby quite often, but you were in the lobby. And I came to you and I said, hey, Jeremy, take a look at this. I'm looking at this desk. Is this okay to use? And you looked at it and there were scratches all over the top. And you said to me, yeah, that looks fine. And I said, hey, we could even put one of those blotters on top of it to cover up the scratches.
He remembers a lot of details.
And you said,
that's tremendous detail.
And that was it. And then I proceeded from there until last Thursday when I got bombarded by... You took a desk.
Your testimony is that on the day of the desk taking, that Jeremy Coleman told you to take the desk before it was moved.
At least okayed it.
By our window. Before it was moved by our window.
Absolutely.
And Jeremy, you...
100%.
And you maintained what? That he's lying?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Don?
Yes, Mike.
There's one person that's usually in the lobby at all times, and that person is Terry, and I think she's honest as the day is long.
Now, we did have a conversation in the lobby, but I'll tell you about
it. Before, you didn't even see me that day. Now, all of a sudden, you had a conversation in the lobby.
That's true.
Oh, okay.
No, the question as stated was, you could take the desk, and the answer to that is no.
No, that wasn't the answer, because, of course, I would not do something like that and take something that you said.
But you had already done it. I walked into the middle of a controversy.
No, it hadn't been done by that point.
Mr. Linewand, Mr. Coleman, no. Were there any other people? Alan, hold it. Were there any people with you at the time? Were there any people with you, Jeremy, or with you, Alan, that might have heard the conversation?
No.
Let me ask this.
Jeremy says, uh-huh.
Let me ask this. Alan, who I know to be a devoted family man.
Absolutely.
With a wonderful wife and wonderful children.
Absolutely.
Do you swear on your family's life that what you're saying is true?
Swear to God.
Oh.
Now, listen.
We know.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Listen.
Swear to God.
You know, no matter what
swear
I say about this guy, I'll
swear
say
to God.
This guy loves his kids.
Oh, yeah.
This,
and anybody who has kids understands what's going on
this
with that.
This I know. And you know what? It's not even something that you fool around with.
No kidding.
Okay. Jeremy?
Hi.
I know you have fathered no children. That we know.
What can Jeremy swear on?
Well, I know that Jeremy's mother is still alive. Isn't she?
Yeah.
On the life of your mother, do you swear that...
In the eyes of God,
in
the life of your mother.
Mm-hmm. Do you swear that the facts are as you state them?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Oh, my God.
Jeremy. I would say that you could expect a major heart attack for your mother sometime tonight.
Jeremy,
and I will not be held responsible for it.
I know you're a man who understands good radio, and I guess you're trying to get a lot out of it, but, boy, this is...
I know you're a man who doesn't want to pay $600.
Oh, the battle royale is raging. Gentlemen, I should point out that we have a total impasse here. Mm-hmm. One of you is lying.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I'm not lying.
Listen,
that's very clear to me.
I will say that Alan Limewine does present a very strong case.
Well, he's dressed like a lawyer.
Yes,
I mean, he's dressed like Johnny Cochran.
That's right. The detail, though, Don, is what I'm talking about. The details that...
All right, listen. I'll give you each 15 seconds to make a closing statement. Then we shall leave it up to the people who listen to this program.
That's a wonderful
idea.
To
decide who's guilty and who's innocent.
Why
don't
you let him start?
Jeremy, please.
Oh.
Your closing statements on your innocence.
The accused has to start.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
You're accused, too.
Go ahead.
Okay, wait. What am I supposed to do?
This is Jeremy playing dumb. He knows what he has to do. Closing statement. Make your case.
Guilty.
Tell us why. Tell us exactly what happened. Briefly summarize and tell us why you're not lying.
Are you going to cut me off at the end of 15 seconds? That may not.
No. I will. 15 seconds was just a
guideline.
Yes. Go ahead.
Everything that I've told you so far is absolutely true. A couple of weeks ago or months ago, whatever, Miss Bobby approached me about the desk, and I told her that she should take my desk so I could get a groovy glass desk if the station was going to buy a desk. That I think I told you last week. I walked into the building to find this big controversy going on with the taking of your intern desk. Alan and I did indeed talk in the lobby at the time, and I didn't tell him anything like take the desk. I can't remember what we talked about. I'd walked in after getting my car towed. I was about to go out to lunch with Ken, which makes you nervous as it is anyway. I was checking my messages. And then next thing I know, all of a sudden I'm accused unfairly after doing all of the nice things I've done for you guys lately.
Okay. All right.
He's a program.
Well said. However, well said and well spoken. Now, Alan, your closing statement, please.
I would have no reason to lie about this.
Let me also say, though, can I say something? As much as it pains me to say this, in recent weeks, Jeremy Coleman has proved himself to be an ally to this program
mm-hmm.
in some behind-the-scenes maneuvering that's gone around. So
okay.
I will say that in all fairness to him. Now go ahead, slaughter him.
By the way, could I bring somebody else into this? Because I just saw...
Oh, a witness?
Yes,
absolutely.
Please.
Okay.
Please do.
Sure, absolutely. Bring a witness. That'll make your case stronger. Who do you call to the stand?
There is somebody at this radio station who is probably more honest than anybody who exists here.
Oh, is this you pounding the hand now, Al?
That's good, Al.
I'm sorry.
All right, who is it? Who's the honest person?
And she knows right after the conversation transpired 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago...
Mm-hmm.
What occurred?
Who's your mystery witness?
Yeah, you have a witness. That's great. Bring her on.
Who is it?
Maureen Boyle.
Maureen Boyle.
Now, Maureen won't go on the air.
She won't go on the air. That's right.
Okay. Could she hold up a sign outside?
I tell you what, during the next commercial break, you get a written statement from Maureen Boyle.
That's right.
During the next commercial break, 6 minutes, you get her to write down the facts, and Jeremy will call you back, and we'll continue. Right. Everybody's dismissed now during this break.
Jeremy, you can't leave.
What? Okay.
You're right now, I would say that you're considered a flight risk.
We'll call you back. We'll call you back at this same number.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. All right. You go get your letter.
And you out in listening land out there, you have to figure out because you're going to vote on who's right here.
Yes, we'll be back with the final evidence.
The court now takes a 7-minute recess.
I got to pee real bad. We'll be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
Sit down, Danny. Danny, my niece is the kind of girl that has a sudden zest for living. The last thing any of us need right now is a lot of loose talk about her behavior.
I swear I didn't tell anybody anything, sir.
Good. Good, good. Danny, Danny, the most important decision you can make right now is what do you stand for, Danny? Goodness or badness?
I want to be good.
Good. Good. Very good. Are you my pal, Mr. Scholarship Winner?
I'm your pal. How about a Fresca?
Oh.
Do we want to get right?
Two solid men who work with their hands for ye, Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
Money, honey.
All right.
That's what this is all about.
Yeah, it all comes down to dollars and cents at the most petty radio station in the free world.
I've already decided who's guilty here.
Oh, you haven't even heard the other closing.
Well, very strange coincidence, Buzz. I also have come to my guilty verdict.
Well, has new evidence come to light in the last...
No, there's been no new evidence. I would just say this, and I know that Alan is listening in the other room. I don't know that Jeremy's listening down at the satellite in Atlanta where he is now.
Mm-hmm.
Although it doesn't say a lot for a guy who would put his mother's life on the line.
Mm-hmm.
I know how I am with Bart.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how anybody with a kid is about their kids.
Yep.
That even if it's over a $600 desk, mm-hmm. and even if you're goofing, and even if you're trying to do a crazy bit, if someone says to you, your child's life,
mm-hmm.
are you telling the truth?
Yeah.
At that point, that's the breaking point
yeah,
for anybody
absolutely.
Who's decent.
That yeah, absolutely. Isn't that sort of unfair discrimination against those of us who don't have children?
Let me, well...
That's an interesting
yes.
point, Mr. Burbank. It is.
Yes, it is, however... But
many, many cases...
I mean,
I haven't
saying.
Seen Jeremy and his mother.
Right. True.
I've seen Alan with his kid.
True. Okay. All right.
Okay, I've seen the affection there.
In many cases, when the on your mother's life issue is raised, the age of the parent is taken into consideration as opposed to the small child, and that's where the argument comes
from. Child with a life... Okay. Full ahead of them,
mm-hmm.
mother
right.
very near the end.
That's right.
Here's Alan now. Do you have evidence, Al?
I'd like to say, though, for the record, Don, you know, with that relationship I had with my mom, I would like to say I would come clean on either count. I would come clean on either count. I don't speak for Jeremy Coleman, though.
And I think everybody knows how I feel about my parents.
Screw them.
Selling out a heartbeat. Effers. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Don.
Hi, Les. Do you have your statement from Maureen?
Unfortunately, I kind of feel like OJ here. My witnesses do not recall the exact incident.
You know what this is now? This is divided loyalty.
Oh, this is incredible. Yeah.
I must tell you that Maureen got her job here
right.
because of Jeremy. She worked with Jeremy in Roanoke, which is how she got the job here.
I would also say this is very damaging to your case.
Well, I actually walked around the station trying to find some witnesses to recall exactly what happened.
I would say that you are certainly the more passionate of the two in your closing statement.
You know, I will tell you in closing, Don
yes.
and Mike, you have yes. never trusted program directors in your lives,
mm-hmm.
and I understand why. Jeremy is a perfect example, and I used to think...
We haven't trusted sales guys either, though, Al, yeah. to be honest with
all
you.
All right, but you really had a disdain for practice.
Mm-hmm.
After hearing the way Jeremy is trying to slide out of this, I now understand why.
Let me point something out to you, Al, that you are a general sales manager. The next rung in your illustrious career will be a general manager. You are very close to the position that we do not trust at all.
Yeah, you're halfway.
But I'm not there yet.
You're like half lizard right
not
now.
There yet.
You're not there. That's true, and that's a good point.
I will tell you that unfortunately I did this sort of on an island.
Mm-hmm.
I worked directly with Jeremy on this, and Jeremy did give me the okay. Jeremy doesn't recall saying that or giving me the okay, and that's
right.
unfortunate. But I will tell you, I am not lying. I have no reason to lie.
Okay.
You know, okay. that's my closing statement.
Thank you.
You know, he is a worm.
Very good.
Thank you, Alan.
Very good, Doc.
He is a worm.
He is a worm. That's his final statement.
Thank you, Al. We'll let you know our verdict. But, of course, you may remain in the courtroom to hear Jeremy's closing statement,
his rebuttal.
C93, this is Ashley.
Yes, hello, Ashley. This is Don and Mike.
Hi.
Doing a radio show that should be heard in Atlanta. Maybe Jeremy could work on that a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Can we talk to Jeremy Coleman, please?
Sure. Hold on just a second.
Too busy being a worm. It's Ashley from Atlanta.
a little grunt from Mr. Burbank, I hear. Yeah. You like that name and the fact that she's
Hello?
In Atlanta, right?
Hello, Jay.
Oh, there you are. Hi.
Hi. Well, Alan can find no member of the staff to go on record about this.
Oh, God.
And he finished his closing statement by referring to you as a worm.
Now, we will give you the chance for the same. Say you could have a final rebuttal.
Wait. He's already had a closing statement.
Yeah, but I let you have another one, too.
Well, you both get two.
Okay.
I have decided, with the arrogance of one who is innocent, to feel sorry for Alan in this case.
Good angle.
But all I would caution you to observe is the issue of motive. What would I have to gain by allowing your desk to go away? Absolutely nothing. What would Alan have to gain by causing me or saying that I'm the one who said that he could? He would have to gain $600 that otherwise Ken will make him pay for your new desk because you were on the air with him on Friday and in probably a moment of weakness or sadness, he said that you could buy another desk.
I would agree with that. However, I would also say that because I have had such experience with program directors and because in recent weeks there have been a couple of occasions for you and I to be in close contact, that I would not put it beyond you to use that to your advantage, thinking that I would think that you're a good guy.
Yep.
But there is no advantage. I mean, if I come away...
No, here's the advantage. The advantage is that you're our boss. That's why you do it. That's why you would do it. Because
that's why I would give away your desk?
And you would want to, have the goodwill of the sales side. And, you are management, Jeremy. That is an undisputed fact. You are management, and it is your job to get along well with the powers that be and the department heads here at the station.
Yes, Al, go ahead, sure.
Jeremy,
if it was
mano y mano.
If it was in my interest to do whatever it took to get along with Alan, I would be taking the fall at this point.
All right, then mano y mano, Alan.
Mano y mano, Jeremy, just you and I.
Yep.
Not the zillions of listeners out there. I've got a question for you. Did I not take the bullet for you the other day? I mean, nobody else is in this room except for you and I. We're on the phone together. Did I not take a bullet for you the other day? And I said to you, Jeremy, I could have thrown you under the bus, and you said you should have.
Yes. No, I said...
Oh! Yes!
No.
Yes. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that Alan said to you that he took a bullet for you?
Yes. And he said, isn't it great of me that I did not mention you to Don and Mike? And I'm like, you should have mentioned me to Don and Mike. I have nothing to do with this. It makes absolutely
no difference. Let me ask you then, Jeremy.
Yeah?
Why would Alan say that to you in confidence then? Why would he say
that?
And then why would you say you should have?
Because, he was worried about involving me on the air, and I thought, oh, isn't that nice of him? He's just trying to keep me away from the terrors of being on the radio because he knows that I try to not be on the air with any of the shows.
And that's a strategy that's working for you today.
Gee, I know.
He's slippery. I'll tell you that.
I think you're overanalyzing what happened here, Jeremy.
No, the analysis is incredibly simple. I have nothing to do with this.
You know, we have one man that says you do, and we have one man that says you don't. This is still a total impasse.
I say we have a duel.
A duel!
How about you guys take your shirts off and duke it out? Old-fashioned, like Clint Eastwood in those movies with a monkey. Any which way but loose. Well, listen, we're not paying for that desk, and we're keeping that desk, and you boys can work it out.
Are we going to find out from the listening audience who's guilty here?
However, I will just say this, that whatever goodwill has been built up between Jeremy and myself and our program, and whatever goodwill that Alan has between myself and us and the program,
yes,
both of those hang in the balance now.
Yeah, and I would like to leave it, regardless of what the listeners say, because they're going to come up with the final decision here, but both of you gentlemen are responsible for this situation. It is off of our shoulders, and you guys have to figure out what to do. We no longer have anything to do with it.
Well, if Jeremy's in Washington, I could talk to him about that.
If there would be anybody now who would like to just be a man,
I'll take care of it.
Stand up and say, listen, all kidding aside, either Alan says, I ordered the desk, or Jeremy says...
Or you come to an agreement with both of you right now.
I ordered the desk, or you guys, you split it 50-50 to say we were both guilty.
Jeremy, just fess up. We could be over with this. You got work to do, I got work to do. Just fess up. It's been a great radio show.
Yeah, but we got a real show to do today.
That's right.
We had a real show planned.
I'm about to drive to the airport to fly back to Washington, and I will do it with a smile on my face because I know I'm innocent.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
It's in your hands, fellas.
Bye. Bye. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, right. Alan.
You're excused. Ladies and gentlemen.
To be continued.
Hmm. I think I know who's guilty.
Well, you are the hanging judge, and I think regardless of what our listeners decide, you will have the final say.
Either way, there has been irreparable damage done now.
I am disgusted.
Between this program and one of the departments at this radio station.
I just want to say again that I am totally disgusted.
Let's take one call to gauge the audience, and then we'll come back on our next break and do nothing but take your votes.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Let's go to our jury, a jury of their peers. Hello, who do you think is guilty?
Well, I got a question. Don's got to ask Jeremy a question.
What was the question, sir?
If indeed he had two conversations with Alan, what was the content of those conversations? Because Alan told him what the conversations was, but Jeremy he denied those conversations.
Yeah, there was not a lot of detail in Jeremy's conversation.
All right, good. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We will take your votes on this matter after this. Making another statement on his behalf.
More evidence, we understand.
Here's Alan.
All right. Now, I would say that if Jeremy has skedaddled from that station down in Atlanta...
I have his mobile phone.
Okay, good. Say if he's left there, that would be suspicious. Flight
well,
risk.
He said he had a flight to catch, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Who knows if he's lying?
Mm-hmm.
What a petty way to run a company. Wouldn't you think if you were our boss... Wouldn't you just kiss our ass? Wouldn't you just say, listen,
yes.
Give the clowns the death?
C-93, this is Jennifer.
Yes, hi, this is Don and Mike again. We're still on the air. Is Jeremy left yet?
Yes, but you can reach him on his portable phone.
I got that number. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, calling Jeremy Coleman on his portable phone as he wings his way to the airport, getting ready to come back here where he's going to have probably a close to a three-hour meeting with Alan Limewand.
Wouldn't it really just be easier?
Yeah, just let it go, guys, listen.
Your call is being forwarded. Please stay on the line. And that's number 10.
Let the big clowns have their desk.
Mm-hmm.
It'll keep them happy. That's what I would do if I was the manager here.
Sure. Well, the manager's not here.
Oh, that's
Jeremy.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Hi, Alan has requested to speak to you again.
Hi, Alan.
Jeremy, how you doing?
I am fine.
Jeremy, I was thinking, and I want to get your input on this.
Okay.
Aren't you a very visual person? Like, you need to actually see things written down, and if you don't have things written down, you don't necessarily remember those things. Is that true about you?
That is actually true, yes.
Yeah, that is true, isn't it?
Yep.
I could testify to that. He is compulsive writing things down. What is your point here, Alan?
Look of satisfaction on Alan's face.
Pretending he's Al Pacino in here.
So guilty by version of omission or...
I'm just so we would agree that would be the case with you as far as a character trait.
Yes.
Many of the people on my sales staff, I can't speak for everybody else, but many of the salespeople feel, as I feel, unless we write something down, and you've often said this, unless it's written down, I won't remember this.
Right.
Is that correct?
Or I won't be held to it.
I won't remember it, or I won't be held to it.
What I say is I won't be held to it.
What is the point here, Alan? Okay, my point is it possible that these conversations were had with me, but because you did not write them down, you don't remember them?
It is possible, but if you did not write them down...
Wait a minute.
Major. No. But if you were going to use that argument, then why would you do something that I said you could do without getting it from me in writing?
Huh?
No, I understand that, too.
That's a little convoluted, but...
No, exactly. You're saying that you can't believe anything I say unless you give it to me in writing.
No, I'm saying that you don't remember things unless it's in writing. I'm not saying we don't have conversations.
Jeremy, would the point be that if you don't write it down, you can't be held to anything?
If I try not to be held responsible to anything that I haven't gotten in writing.
Listen, can I just talk to both of you guys as men for a second?
I mean, what is...
Yes.
Okay. Both of you guys. It is apparent now one of you is lying. I think we're all agreed. Are we all agreed that somebody's lying?
Somebody's lying, Don.
Yes.
Now, listen. I will assume the role, a role that I assume very well, of being the egotistic artist.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, the only thing that the sales guy should do and the programming guy should do... Try to make me happy.
Hear.
Because I'm having a temper tantrum.
Right.
Because you guys won't give me my desk.
and we have our contract negotiation coming up, and maybe we won't resign with Infinity, and you guys treat us like crap, and you would never do this to Howard Stern. So now that I've done that, all of that, why don't one of you guys just have the balls to say, listen, this has been pretty good radio, but
it's over.
But I was lying.
Taken care of.
How come one of you doesn't have the balls to do that?
Because I'm not lying, so Jeremy's got
to
do it.
I'm not lying either. I'd be happy to work it out off the air with Alan and not bother you guys.
No, how would you work it out off the air? Why don't you work it out right now on the air with him?
You know, Jeremy, that would be wonderful if you could work it out on the air with Alan right now.
Go ahead.
Because at that point, Alan would probably capitulate.
What the hell does that mean?
I'm with you, Al.
No, come on,
use a smaller word, Jeremy.
Do it now.
Oh, okay. Alan is lying. I don't know what else to say. I never told him he could take the desk.
But is it possible, Jeremy, that because of the way you are, and this is no knock on you, but the way you are is you need things in writing, and obviously I didn't put this in writing. I just got verbal approval from you twice, and I just ran with it as salespeople tend to do. You can go with it, and you go with it. And as the sales manager, that's what I did based upon a colleague on the other side of the office, the program director. I would not move a desk. I would not move furniture without getting somebody's approval.
On the contrary, I would say you are a director of sales. Your job is to get what you need with the least amount of hassle.
Okay, hold on. You know what I say? I say that the Bulls play tonight at 7:30, and I want the show to be over at 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to put Jeremy on hold.
Jeremy,
I'm going to put you on hold. Alan, during the commercial break, you talk to Jeremy in a private room.
You guys figure out what to do.
He's on the hotline.
Right.
You figure it out.
Well, that's interesting. So I think now would be an opportunity for both of you guys to work things out and hopefully come to a decision.
Because, listen, one of you is lying, and one of you is going to have to say to the other, listen, Don and Mike aren't going to let this go.
Yeah, and the bottom line is here, we simply did what we were told to do.
You know,
that's
Al said, buy the desk. We bought a desk.
That's it.
You know, because somebody took our desk during the show.
So now I think it really falls on you guys to work this situation out and come to a solution.
And I already had the temper tantrum. Even though we didn't really have it, I already had it.
Yeah,
so.
But I'll tell you something. Wouldn't it be safe to say we're both on the verge of another one right now?
Oh, yeah, a real one.
This is starting to get a little old.
A real one. So, guys, hold on, Jeremy. Hold on, please. And, ladies and gentlemen, hold on. Andy Rice, you go ahead and talk to him. Go ahead. Andy Rice has to
work it out.
Hold on. I would also like to say that I will not derive you people of the pleasure of voting. You will be able to vote. Hello, Andy.
Hang on. Let me turn the radio down.
Understand that Andy Rice has some testimony. What is your testimony, Andy?
Well, I happened to overhear on Friday, or whenever this whole thing was going on, that Alan did say to Jeremy that he took the fall for him. And he was also explaining to Steve Johnson during the last commercial break that this was all making good radio.
All right, so what's your point?
Well, what he's saying is that he has heard Alan say that he took the bullet on Friday for Jeremy.
So you're saying that indicates that what Alan's saying is true.
And that even now, these guys are simply perpetuating it because they think it's what we want. They think it's good radio.
That's what he was explaining to Steve Johnson, if I heard.
Now, if you were to choose a guilty party between Alan and Jeremy, Andy Rice, who would it be?
Well, as much as I like both of them, I'd have to say the guilty party in this situation would be Alan.
All right, thank you, Andy.
Right.
Thank you for your... Now,
it's two strikes against Alan.
I think it also goes back to who had what to gain out of this. Who wanted the desk? Who got the desk?
And Alan is currently talking to Jeremy on the warm line.
That's wonderful.
So let's break. Everybody keep in mind the goal of the show today. My butt on that couch at 7:30 watching the Bulls go to 70.
Better get to those commercials, Don.
Be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
Listen, my friend. I am a supporter of the gay community. I wore a red ribbon to the Emmys. I have been to several Elton John concerts.
What does that mean?
Elton John is a gay.
Someone call for a doctor? Because here's Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
I believe that in a roundabout way, one of our last defendants, Andy Rice, was actually defending Alan while he said he was defending Jeremy.
Yeah, he said at the very end of his speech, which defended Alan, I said, who do you think is guilty? And he said Alan, and I think he misspoke.
He said, yes, we got to get his testimony again, because the way I understand his testimony, he said he heard Alan saying, oh, this is probably Andy calling. Hello, is this Andy?
I'm defending Jeremy.
Okay, but you did say that you heard Alan
say to somebody that he took the bullet for Jeremy and that all that's happening now is good radio.
You see, Andy, your testimony...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Your testimony defended Alan, and then you say you're defending Jeremy.
Could you please be more specific? Could you clarify your testimony?
Well, I did actually, you know, I did hear both comments, although I would tend to say Alan's comment about him doing this because it makes good radio would tend to make me believe that Alan is still the guilty party.
However, you also did testify that you heard Alan say to somebody that he took the bullet for Jeremy.
Yes, and then Jeremy said that he wasn't even involved and that all you had to do was talk to Jeremy, that he didn't really care either way.
Hmm? Listen, who did you hear him say this to, that he took the bullet for Jeremy?
To Jeremy.
You heard the conversation. Well, you're a witness. How did the conversation go?
He said, Alan said, I took the bullet for you on this one, and Jeremy said something to the effect of that he didn't care, and...
That is important testimony, because
right.
said away from our earshot,
sure.
If Alan said to Jeremy, I took the bullet for you, regardless of what Jeremy's response is,
mm-hmm.
Alan is showing that he lied to cover up Jeremy.
Yeah, you see, he wouldn't broach the subject with Jeremy at all if he was lying. If he was telling the truth to us, which is indeed true that he did take the bullet for Jeremy, of course he would go to Jeremy and say that. Doesn't that make sense?
And Jeremy at that point, being as it had all been played out on the air already,
right.
would say, well, so what? Go ahead and say my name.
And maybe with a little swagger along with it. You know, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think...
like he's at the ranch.
Sure.
You know, like he's the straw boss.
Yeah, I don't care. Let him whine.
All right, thank you, Andy.
You're welcome.
That testimony has further clouded the issue.
Yes, it has, Andy Rice. Don, I think that every individual here at the station right now, they're divvying up on personal relationship lines here. I think that's what's happening. I think the personal relationships the people have formed here, that's what's clouding people's opinions.
I would like to, at this point, ask Alan to come back into the room. During the entire commercial break, he was on the telephone with Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Or hold on, wait a minute. Before you say something, let me try one more person.
Just want to check in, and this might be the most important person of all.
Actually, I'll tell you exactly who I'm trying to call here is Big Gum Jim.
Yeah. See if he's in. He's another behind-the-scenes player who might give us some insight into the goings-on.
He's already gone home for the day.
Huh? We're sorry.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's his number right there. Don't you have Big Gum Jim's number?
I've got it.
It's right here. This is his home number. As a matter of fact, before Big Gum Jim left, he specifically gave us the home number. And hold on a second.
You're working hard.
Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Here it comes.
There you go.
Okay.
I was actually really going to call him there for a second.
Welcome to 1-800-ASK-4-ASK. The only party line you need for good butt action.
All right, now let me really do try.
Oh, that was worth it. Alan Limewand is in the studio now after concluding his conversation with Jeremy Coleman.
I simply want to ask Jim McClure, who is Jeremy's right-hand man. Jim, conspicuous by his absence. Hold on, is this...
Hotline ringing.
Here you go.
This must be Big Gum Jim.
Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hello, my friend. Doing great. Now,
good.
I must tell you, as much as I like Big Gum Jim, as fond as I am of him... When this originally started over an hour ago,
mm-hmm.
during the first commercial break, as I walked back towards the Big Gum Jim area of the building, I saw him on the telephone.
That is correct.
And I saw his head peek out to see who was coming by, and I said, don't you call him.
And I was not calling him.
Don't you tell. So let me just say that I know up front, which is why I accused you, that you have a close relationship with Jeremy. He's your direct boss.
Yes, he is. But I can prove I was not calling him. I had no need to call Mr. Coleman because
I will give
the window.
I will give him this, that I often do see his camel-like neck coming around the corner.
Yeah. All right.
His ostrich-like neck, his giraffe-like neck stretching out. Well, then here's the question, E.T. Is it your opinion that Alan authorized the stealing of the desk?
I believe Alan did, and I'll give you two reasons why.
Okay.
Number one, Jeremy related this story to me last week when this whole event occurred because I said to him what happened because I missed part of the controversy because I was out of the building when I came back in. Right around the time that Jeremy came back in from his car trouble.
Right.
And he said, you know, Alan never even spoke to me about this. He talked to Bobby. And Bobby told him, you can, I don't remember what Bobby said, but I know that he said, Alan never even spoke to me. He spoke to Bobby, which is the same story he later related on the air. So I don't think Jeremy would tell me something to cover up. And second off, I know dealing with you,
the respect that Jeremy has for the show. Before I am allowed to do anything on Prozac's behalf,
strike this from the record. This is just asking.
Here's just sucking up.
He doesn't want to insult you in any way. If I deal with anything,
yeah, but who's to say Jeremy wasn't lying to you? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And, you know, at the end there, unfortunately, Big M Jim doesn't realize it, but the sucking up at the very end there clouded his testimony.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Now here is Alan, who would like to make another statement. He just got on the phone with Jeremy.
Yes, I did, but I'd like to say so. It seems like we're stacking the deck on Jeremy's behalf here. You're calling everybody who has...
Oh, contraire,
mon frère. If you can get someone on your side...
Well, I mean, I got a whole sales staff who heard me say...
Then bring them in here. Then have them testify.
Absolutely. We will welcome any
testimony. All right, anybody...
Let me tell you something. Come into my judge's chambers. Hold on. I have to have a private conversation. Where'd the door go?
We need the door.
Don't put the door sound effect in.
Private chambers.
All right, now.
Alan, this is a monumental occasion right here. Mr. Geronimo's calling you into his private
chambers. Come into my chambers.
I'm here. Beautiful office.
Now, it's just you, me, Mike, Buzz here in my chambers.
Lovely chambers, incidentally, Don.
They're dreamy, aren't they?
These are absolutely dreamy.
Nice drapes.
I love the...
Like something from Matlock.
I love the tropical fish wallpaper.
Okay, now listen. I want Jeremy to be guilty, okay? I'm on your side, okay? I'm the judge, but I'm on your side, okay?
All right, that's all I wanted to tell you.
There you go. Yeah, that was...
We're inside the Maryland chambers right now. Now, everybody come back up. Okay. Now that we've had that discussion, okay? Now you know where the judge stands on the issue. Simply win the case, man. This is what I'm saying to you.
I hear you.
Now, the important thing, though, I'd like to bring up is that you just had a very lengthy conversation with Jeremy Coleman, and I believe we instructed both of you to work this situation out, and that now is the situation concluded. I think you guys could do that.
Well, we did. We had a conversation, and unfortunately, we disconnected two times because he's on his portable phone.
Right.
At the point we were disconnected the first time, we were at an impasse because he doesn't recall, and I said, Jeremy, bottom line is, I do recall. You don't recall, I do recall, and the bottom line is, I didn't do anything wrong here. I asked you, and you know I asked you. I said, even if you don't remember 3 weeks ago, you've got to remember 4 days ago, and 4 days ago took place in the lobby, and quite honestly, why would I ever take something from your side of the office without asking
you? Okay, well, that's covered ground. Now,
I understand that.
What do we do now?
So we tell you two guys to handle it mano a mano.
Honestly, what he said to me?
Yes.
And I wish he was here because I'm speaking out of school without him being here. But he said maybe we can do a plea bargain. I'm like, I'm not plea bargaining. I've done nothing wrong here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I got to tell you, it's my reputation at stake, too. And I...
Some would say you did something wrong when the whole idea was to take a mess from somewhere else.
Hold on.
Please.
Let me try him. Let me see what kind of a plea bargain they would want to give
up. But there are people in my sales department...
Then bring them to us.
...who heard me say that I took a bullet for Jeremy.
Bring them to us, then. We need the testimony. Otherwise, it's your word.
Would any of the salespeople who are listening,
Jeremy.
I'm sure they all are.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Jeremy, Alan said that you had discussed a plea bargain arrangement with him during your private conversation. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, Alan said that he was interested in dropping this and getting back to the work, and you guys had said that you wanted to do your radio show and not be bothered with this anyway, and I said, well, the only way to do that is for us to get back on and say, look, we've worked it out, but part of the deal is that neither of us can talk about it on the air, and then we work it out, you know, later.
Now, unfortunately, this is not a real court matter, so it can all be discussed on the air.
Absolutely, and really, no secrets with our listeners.
No, nope. Then the plea bargain doesn't work.
There's no. Now, if you had worked out a plea bargain, would you have been the one to plead guilty?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, then what kind of plea bargain are we talking about here?
I had no idea. We were at an impasse. I figured time would probably help.
Same words that Alan used. They were at an impasse. Well, you guys can agree on the fact that you disagree.
Now, Alan would like to call more witnesses in because he feels that we've been unfair. That we have stacked
on my behalf?
Yes. Because
I appreciate that.
Because there have been so many people who have stepped forward to testify for you, all the people who work for you.
Well, then...
Thank you.
Here we go.
Now here come the seals. Let me just say, your first witness, you lose credibility with Steve Goldstein.
I didn't tell him to come in.
I think you should be aware of the fact that this next witness that you're calling is really has the potential to damage your case.
He's deader than dead.
Based on his controversy with the show last week.
With Canon Grace. Here is Steve Goldstein. What would you like to say, Steve?
Steve Goldstein, here he comes.
I apologize to Canon.
All right, the apology, the court accepts your apology. Please give us any relevant testimony.
The relevant testimony is, number one, that I know Alan, and I know his kids, and I know his
wife.
Come
on, what did he tell you?
Well, he told me the same thing that he's told
everyone else, and that is he pulled me into his office and he said,
hold on, shut up. Here's the one person I will believe, Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle, step up to the microphone.
I call Michelle as my witness.
That's right.
She's got a solution.
Oh, a solution. Okay, go ahead, Michelle. Well, come to the microphone, please.
All right, here's Michelle.
I know you hate to do that, but you're in the studio now.
Hi, Michelle.
A client of mine is willing to pay for the desk to keep peace.
That's wonderful, but the answer is no. That's a wonderful... Listen.
Can I say Tyson Burton Joy Exchange real quick?
Wait, Michelle. Do you want to add anything? You were with us at Happy Hour Thursday night.
Now, let me say that. I would believe Michelle's testimony over Manny Moe and Jack that you got lined up here.
Hey, Alan, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, you know? I really don't, but, you know, she just came in and said the client's willing to pay for the desk. We didn't have to know that. You know, the client could pay, but yet you say that you're paying for the desk. Duh!
I mean, you had a solution
right
there.
I've been in here all afternoon.
Okay.
All right, now, Michelle.
You were at happy hour with me. I haven't said a word to you, but you know the conversation that took place.
Please, Michelle, up to the microphone.
Please, up here.
Step up to the microphone, Michelle. And way to throw in that client. Very good. Nicely done.
Now, what is Al talking about happy hour? Did he mention something to you during happy hour?
Yes.
And what did he mention?
Oh.
Tell me exactly what he said, please, Michelle.
Jeremy's liar.
The voice of innocence is about to speak.
What did he say, Michelle?
Do you not remember the conversation?
Okay. Do you remember or not, Michelle?
No.
Do you remember what you had for breakfast this morning?
No.
Was it happy hour at Good Guys?
No.
Was it at Camelot?
Is he still sending you out to all those strip joints?
No.
No, okay, good.
That used to be Michelle's territory. So they would send her out to sell the... Yeah. You know, you don't send a guy like CJ, a guy who would be there having a ham and cheese sandwich anyway. You send Michelle out to sell the commercials to the boob bars.
And she, you know, give her credit. She closed the deal.
Oh, she did.
Way to go.
Now, Michelle, listen. Come on. Think real hard.
Yeah,
what did Alan say to you that night?
Alan is relying on you for this testimony right now.
What did Alan say to you at Happy Hour?
Did he make a reference to the conversation he had with Jeremy? Did he bring up the subject to the desk when you were at Happy Hour?
Yeah, he did. I just can't remember.
Oh.
She's being honest.
All right.
She's being honest. Look at
Thank
Alan.
You. All right, Steve. A very brief statement.
Here's a very brief statement.
Minimal sucking up here, Steve.
In my dealings with... I'm not going to suck up to Jeremy. I'm not going to suck up to Alan.
All right.
In my dealings with Jeremy...
Did he say anything to you about this case or not?
No.
All right, then you're excused.
You're excused.
CJ.
No, wait. You mean off... I misunderstood you. Sorry.
Has Alan said anything to you about him lying so that Jeremy would not be known as the culprit?
Yes. After this whole thing happened, we were like in his office... And he pulled me aside and he said, you know, I just took a bullet for Jeremy.
All right, thank you for your testimony.
Let me say one other thing. I've never been like...
If it's not a suck up at all.
All right,
say one more thing. Come on.
I think neither guy is lying here. I think Jeremy really believes what he's saying. And what he's saying
is... Oh, shut up.
Yeah, poo-poo. Get out of here.
CJ, you're next. CJ.
Well, yes, I remember CJ. Happy Hour pretty... You know, we were going over the whole thing and we had a few drinks and he basically said... He took the bullet, and I said, you know, you really... I mean, we went into it big time, and Alan basically...
Then tell me more about the testimony. Exactly. Tell me some specifics. What did Alan say?
And could you, before you go on, could you describe big time?
Big time meaning this was the center of the conversation, and we thought it was very funny. And Alan said, you know, I did a pretty good job.
That's right. I just want to remind you...
throw him under the bus. Everything he said... You're in a court of law,
and please keep the sales guy jargon down to a minimum.
Thank you, CJ.
Call
us our next witness, Mr. Big Time. Here he is. David Hainlein, a.k.a. Dobie Gillis.
Fellas.
Hi, Dobie.
How's it going?
Your testimony on this, please?
As you know, being a good Christian that I am.
Ah, now, Jesus, you got to bring that up. All right, I'll say this.
And give him credit. He's the first person to bring Jesus into this.
David Hainlein is a religious man.
And a good family man as well.
And a very good family man.
Yes.
I think, well, we talked about this at lunch today, and Alan was very upset when he saw you coming into the station today because you weren't friendly to him.
And that is true. Like, I did give Alan the cold shoulder.
He's like, is Don still upset about this desk episode? And he can't understand it because we went by what we think was the book. Going to the department heads, talking to Jeremy, saying, hey, this is the deal. We don't want to take something away from anybody without getting permission. That's the way things are done in the professional way at this station. That's what Alan did.
God.
Okay, now, Jeremy could have been thinking about
time.
A million things.
Hold on, what, Jeremy?
Oh, nothing, never mind.
No, no, go ahead, I had you potted down.
I was just going to say it would be about the first time that that ever happened. That ever.
No, now, Jeremy, we always include you in
things. In a professional way, is that what you're saying, Jeremy?
Oh, but the three times last week that you didn't.
The judge would tend to agree with Mr. Coleman on that point.
Absolutely.
This is like the least professional station I ever worked at. Now let's welcome Steve Johnson, the man who the desk was stolen for.
That's right. Nice, Steve.
My desk is called This Much of the Problem. It's unbelievable.
Let's keep in mind that this man's testimony is already tainted.
Yes.
Because he is the recipient of the desk.
He is the direct benefactor of the entire desk.
But I have been through the whole process from the very beginning. And all I can say is this with Alan. I used to work with Alan in a previous
company. Is this a suck-up?
No background.
No background. But
no
one of the things that I know about Alan is he loves to save money for the company. And I remember distinctly the time when he came to me, he said, Steve, guess what? We're getting all the stuff for your office for you, and you won't believe this, but we found you a desk back in the back, and I've talked to Jeremy, and Jeremy has said it's not a problem that we could have that desk.
Oh?
And you know, I have been like the gypsy for the last 3 months.
Very damning
actually, Don,
testimony.
Very
actually,
damaging
actually,
testimony
actually,
for Jeremy.
Don, you remember when I was in Mr. Stevens' office?
Now you remember, everybody remembers the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was scouring through Ken's office, as I often do, to try to unearth any bit of news that he's not telling me about.
Sure.
Steve was using his office.
Yes.
I went through some of Steve's personal papers, advised him not to leave his mortgage information sitting out where I could see it. The reason being, Steve did not have a desk. He was working out of Ken's office.
Don, I think the court realizes that Mr. Jones would have no reason to lie about it.
Mr. Johnson.
Hi, how are you? Hi, nice meeting you. We don't talk an awful lot, do we?
Exactly.
But it doesn't seem to me that Alan would have any reason to lie to Mr. Johnson.
Oh.
And
I have been on him since day one since I've been here to get me a desk.
All right, thank you, Steve. You're accused. Yes, Buzz.
That would be precisely the reason. If Alan were to lie to Mr. Johnson, that would be precisely the reason, because Mr. Johnson has been on Alan's case since the day he got here to get him a desk. No, but Buzz, but it wouldn't be.
Again.
Why would he lie about Jeremy Coleman giving authorization?
No, he'd just come to him and say,
you have a desk.
Review the testimony. What he said was, Alan told him that Jeremy said. It's third-hand information. I would just like to point out that both of you guys have said in the presence of God that you are putting members of your family's life on the line here.
And I'll do it again.
You don't have to do it again. I would just like to point out to both of you guys that, yeah, certainly not in my eyes, but in the eyes of God.
God!
Yeah, well, hold on. I hate to bring him into this, but I will.
Amen.
Wait a minute. Where's my religious music? Ah, here we go.
I still think that, Jeremy, I think that was damaging testimony from Mr. Johnson.
Oh, I don't.
Jeremy, I'd like to ask the age of your mother.
I don't know. 50s?
Yeah, you 50s. Didn't. I guess you didn't write it down.
I could figure it out if I thought about it.
Your mother in her 50s. I'm guessing you, ever the doting son, love mommy, or as you Brits call them, mumsies.
Yeah.
Do you love your mumsie?
Mumsie.
Absolutely.
Mumsie would
talk with me.
Mumsie would give you your Ovaltine and send you out to play your soccer when you were a boy.
It's true.
Mumsy bought you your first Sex Pistols record or whatever it is that has influenced you to such a degree that you now dress like you're with the Salvation Army. I ask you this, Jeremy Coleman.
Yes, sir.
Do you love your mumsy?
Yes, I do.
All kidding aside, keeping in mind that this is just a radio job, keeping in mind that there really is nothing more important in this world than family, you swear on your mother's life that Alan is lying?
Absolutely, emphatically, without a doubt.
Oh, my God.
Alan Linewald, how many children do you have?
Two beautiful children.
Names? Hold on, wait. We've got to wait for my music to read here. Just give it a second.
We're in the God segment right now.
Two. Hold on. There we go. Okay. Alan, how many children you have?
Can we play horror music?
How many kids you have? Two?
I've got two children, yes.
Names?
Alex and Alyssa, excuse me.
Both wonderful children.
They're
seen them both.
They're
seen Alan.
Great.
He's a doting father.
Adorable
a wonderful
children.
Father.
Yeah, adorable
absolutely.
Children.
You swear on your children's lives that Jeremy Coleman is lying?
Yes, I do.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
this is a total and complete impasse. My God, you two.
How can you guys do that? Listen, all kidding aside, whichever one of you is lying, don't you feel a little bad about that? About about using the although, of course, nothing is going to happen.
Well, I think one of the individuals is completely without
maybe
scruples.
Maybe you need to rephrase the question, actually.
How would you rephrase it?
I know Jeremy's lying. Maybe the question should be, is it possible, Jeremy, that you have had a miscommunication here?
Jeremy, on your mother's life, is it possible that you've had a miscommunication with Alan?
I don't know what that means.
Now, what if it means that perhaps you did agree to this and you've forgotten it?
It makes no sense to me. So I don't know why
so that
I
would.
Not,
that would not be a possibility.
Are you saying that you never made the statement, or you never okayed the desk, or that you don't recall?
I'm told you flat out. I talked to about that desk with Bobby. I don't remember talking to Alan about it. I do remember Alan coming to me in the lobby and saying, "Can Robbie tell me I can't take that desk?" And I said, "No, Robbie does not have the authority to do that." And then that was the end of the conversation. And I thought, well, maybe this is leading to something. I didn't follow up on it. But that
was go ahead.
It.
Follow up, Buzz. Follow up. Go ahead.
Is it possible then that Alan had the miscommunication? If he
absolutely not
based on the Rob A.
No, very clear because it was very clearly stated to me. No, Rob A. does not, and he had a look on his face. Rob does have
but,
has nothing to do with that decision.
Did you?
You could take the desk.
Did you interpret that as permission to take the desk?
Yes, you could take the desk. Is permission to take the
you
desk.
You are saying that Jeremy Coleman said to you, "You
absolutely.
Can't take the desk." Jeremy, did you say to him, "You can take the desk"?
No.
Oh, God.
Here we are back to square one.
Here's a question for you, though. Unless you guys think that you're doing some super radio bit, of which I've got to tell you, even I'm getting sick of it now. I just want to get the truth. How can you two guys possibly work together? How could this be? How could Jeremy, how could you ever look at Alan and work with him on a project and vice versa? How could that be? How could this be?
Gentlemen, I believe Mr. Geronimo needs an answer.
One of you's lying. One of you is lying right now.
This is very frustrating.
So how is it that you guys will continue to work together?
Judge Geronimo's patience is getting very thin.
Yeah, so is mine. And by the way, so is my car bill at this point.
And honestly, I haven't been at work for 2 hours.
See, all I know is that if somebody lies to me like that, I cut them out. I cut them out of my life. They're gone.
Mm-hmm.
They're gone forever. They lose all credibility. Aren't you guys like that?
I'm kind of pissed, actually, because I've got a lot of respect for Jeremy, and I think Jeremy knows that. And we talk about a lot of issues, and there's no reason in the world that I would ever do something like this. And he knows it without his permission. And not,
I got to tell you, I mean, stuff happens with you and your department without my permission, and you were in need of a desk, and I was not around.
My God, Miss Bobby has entered the studio.
All right, hold on. It's time for a surprise witness.
Well,
yes, Miss Bobby.
Entering the studio now is the lovely, curvy Miss Bobby.
And Miss Bobby, may I say, your timing is absolutely exquisite.
I think neither one of them is lying. They both heard what they wanted to hear.
Yeah. No. No, it's more black and white than that, Bobby.
I don't think so.
It's more black and white than that. They're both saying the other one's lying. They are both saying the other one is lying. Neither one of them will even give up that it was miscommunication.
Well, I should point out, though, Miss Bobby, since you are here, you would be the one to ask the question, just who is going to pay for this desk?
I think Alan should.
Yay!
Oh, my God! This is real drama now. This is face-to-face drama between Bobby and Alan.
Oh, God. Now what would Bobby base that...
That's a good question. Bobby, what do you base that opinion on, that Alan should pay for the desk?
Because he shouldn't have taken the desk without talking to you first.
She has a
brown nose, though. That's total brown nose.
No, it's not. It's respect. I mean, you wouldn't take Timmy's desk without talking to me about it, even if Ken said, "Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, you can have the desk."
Miss Bobby, a round of applause for you.
But let me tell you something.
She's the Marcia Clark of this show.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
I feel exhilarated.
A desk that is as far away from Don's office as that desk was, I didn't know it had anything to do with Don Geronimo. If I knew it had to do with Don
Geronimo... Yeah, I must dispute that. The subject was with Rob A. Rob A was involved in this, and you went to Jeremy and made the statement
that... first went to Jeremy, and that was weeks ago.
Yeah, but you went to... But Rob A was involved.
But that whole office
That was literally...
So you know he's associated with this program, and you did. You were aware of the fact that that desk was part of this program.
When Rob said that to me on that Thursday afternoon, yes, that's what I knew.
So, Miss Bobby, let me ask you, who do you think is lying here? If one of these guys is lying, who do you think is lying?
I think they just both remember it the way
they want
to.
No. One of them is lying and one of them is not.
I don't think it's that black and white.
And she's unyielding. You know, this is Miss Bobby,
yes,
here, so she's not going to bend on that.
I understand. Okay, thank you.
And I should point out also that the business manager of the radio station has suggested that the sales manager pay for the desk.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
Thank you. But there she goes. Curvy. Curvy Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
That would be an admission of guilt.
No, I don't think so, necessarily.
To some extent, that would be an admission
of
guilt.
I think, frankly...
Don,
no, you know what I think, Alan?
Hold on.
Wait a minute. I want to say something. Alan, I don't think that's an admission of guilt. I think that's showing that you're the stand-up guy. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what
well,
I would
can I tell you, I am the stand-up guy.
Then prove it.
Then have it come out of the sales,
then prove
the sales budget.
And then we will always have goodwill towards you.
I am not lying.
That's fine.
Okay. You could say you're not lying, but if you say I'm not lying and I'm going to prove that that worm is lying, go ahead, take it out of the sales budget. I don't care. I consider it $5 of goodwill with the Don and Mike show.
Yeah, and also we side with you 100%.
And I make you the same offer, Jeremy. Where are you at now? The airport?
Yep, at the rental car place.
All right, I make you the same offer.
You better write it down.
On behalf of the programming side. You could say, listen, this is so stupid. Alan is lying. Listen, it means nothing. Do I have to ask you guys what you charge for one commercial on our show? I believe it's more than...
work out so that you get to keep the desk. We'll work out the payment of it, whether it's between me or Alan pays himself like he should.
All right,
I guarantee you that. We'll work it out so it's not a hassle to you.
Okay, so we won't be responsible for it.
Nope.
Well, all right, then I take that from Jeremy. Jeremy, are you willing to write that down?
Yep.
All right, then have a good flight back.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, that's great. Jeremy has just said they'll work it out that that we will not have to be responsible for paying for the desk, which, of course, is the right thing.
And I never thought you should be responsible for paying for
the desk. Well, that's wonderful. And you can get together with Jeremy, and both of you can take care of paying for the desk.
Okay, good. But until you figure out who lied, we're still pissed at both of you.
It's amazing to me.
I know, it's amazing. Even though this desk is now going to be paid for, we have a terrible taste in our mouths with the entire incident.
Coppery taste.
Very coppery.
Taste of blood. You're excused, Alan. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for your 2 hours of testimony.
Your 2 hours. And now look at this. We still got 17 phone lines that are ringing off the hook, and people have their opinions.
Well, we've subjected them to this entire trial, and now they want to weigh in with their opinion.
When we come back at 1-800-636-1067, you will be able to vote to tell us who is the guilty party. We'll be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
I cracked myself up. I heard myself saying that, and it made me laugh.
Suck me, the Don and Mike Show.
Let's get the calls here at 1-800-636-1067. More from the Don and Mike Litigation Center. Hello, who do you think was guilty?
I think it's a plot for Jeremy to get his glass desk. And go Red Sox.
Okay, so that would be somebody who thinks that because Jeremy wanted a glass desk, that he probably orchestrated a lot of this to get a new desk.
He also believes in the Red Sox.
Yeah, which is, I think, damaging his credibility.
Two strikes against him. Yeah, eggs Danny Thomas style, and Andy's a Red Sox fan. Hello,
yes.
Don and Mike.
Yes, I think that you should do this the way that my mom would do this with my brother and me. Charge them both for the desk, and then the extra money goes to Children's Hospital or something like that.
See, I can't charge them. It's not my job to charge them. We just want to know, who do you think lied?
Oh, I think Jeremy is lying as lying gets.
Okay, I'm going to keep a little total here as far as who's guilty.
Hello, Don and Mike. Go ahead and vote. You've invested 2 hours in this. What do you think?
I think that Miss Bobby's right, and I think that Buzz tried to back her up. I think that they both think that they're right, and that neither one is really lying.
No, impossible.
Listen
to me.
Why is that impossible?
Ask Buzz.
Listen. Both of these guys are son of a bitches, okay? Both of these guys make their living by lying and by BSing and by rolling through people.
Yeah, but you will agree that in a situation like this, both of them are more than capable of creating their own reality, too, so that in fact, they really believe what happened. I think that happens with liars all the time.
Maybe so, but I think we're giving them both too much credit.
Okay, I'm just saying it's possible.
The point is...
be in charge of the sales staff and not be a liar.
Okay, how can you be a program director and not be a liar?
Okay. So it's a push.
Thank you.
All right, so no, I'm not putting any, and so far it's one for Jeremy. And
people are way too lenient.
Would that be two for Jeremy or just one for
that
Jeremy?
Last one's a push.
Okay, that's a push. Just one for Jeremy so far.
Don and Mike.
Oh, yeah. I don't really care.
Thank you. I'm going to put that in between two of them.
Hello, Don and Mike.
Yeah, I have a show idea.
A what?
I have a show idea. I mean, I have a follow-up thing to this.
Oh, God. Listen, will people just please vote? Simply, who do you think did it? Jeremy or Alan? Hello?
I think they're both lying.
Boy, a lot of people are taking both sides here.
I think they're both lying. They were keeping it on the air.
That is driving you nuts, isn't it?
God, is it so tough? You know what this is like? It's like, okay.
But Alan Moore.
Okay, so you'd vote for Alan. That's all I want.
You're saying that Alan's guilty?
Yeah.
Okay, that's one for Alan.
Thank you. Hello, Don and Mike.
Yeah, I think we need to get someone in there with a lie detector test. Polygraph.
Well, thank you, genius. We simply want people's opinions. Who do you think is guilty?
Jeremy Coleman, definitely.
All right, Jeremy, that's the second vote for Jeremy.
Can I ask why?
Did Gomer say hey?
What?
Did you guys do Gomer Says Hey?
Gomer Says Hey!
Sir, we have important courtroom drama unfolding here. Hello?
Hello.
Who do you think did it?
Well, actually, I wanted to call for two things. I think Jeremy did it.
Yes,
and
three.
I also wanted to let Don and Mike know something new about this Aroma Hotline.
We're not talking about the Aroma Hotline
anymore.
Can't
talk about that, ma'am.
Can I maybe just tell you guys and you can pass it on?
You're talking to us.
We're on the air right now.
Oh, my gosh.
And we can't talk about that.
We're trying to keep it to one topic at a time. Don't call back.
Okay.
Because we don't want to know. We just want to know who you thought was guilty.
Jeremy.
Three votes for Jeremy.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye. Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Yeah, definitely Jeremy. Definitely.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Hello, Don and Mike.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hey, good morning.
Guten Abend.
Great 70s.
Who do you vote for?
Jeremy, I think someone's lying.
Why?
I think he's got a vendetta against you, and I always think he has.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. That's one for Brother Louis.
Brother Loser.
Hi, guys. They're both guilty of sin.
No, but pick one.
Jeremy.
All right. Thank you.
And so far, Jeremy, 6-1.
Hi, Don and Mike.
Alan.
Hi, Don. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I think that Alan is guilty because Jeremy sounds so much more sincere when he talks to you than Alan does, nor Ken Stevens, to be honest with you.
Okay, so that's another vote for Alan.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Yeah, Don.
Yes.
Hey, off with Jeremy's head.
Okay, another
all
vote
right.
for Jeremy.
Thank you.
I'm all for that. Hello, Don and Mike Show.
I think Alan's guilty.
Okay. Why do you think Alan's guilty?
Because he just sounds like a weasel.
I'll give you that, too.
Totally subjective, but you have a right to your opinion.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
It's definitely Alan.
Why?
Why? When this was all occurring last week,
yes.
You guys kept calling him on it.
Yeah.
He kept stuttering on, he didn't really have a good definitive answer back then, and he was doing it again today.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
See, now, these are the people who will actually listen to everything. This is why I listen to the people, at least in this case, why I listen to the people who listen to the show.
The votes for Alan are coming on fast and furious now.
What's the score right now?
So far, it's 7 for Jeremy, 4 for Alan.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
7 for Jeremy's guilt, 4 for Alan's guilt. 7 for Jeremy's guilt, 4 for Alan's guilt. Yes, 7.
This is a contest that these guys don't want to win.
That's right.
Hello, Don and Mike.
Hey.
It's like golf. The low score would actually be the winner.
That's
here.
Correct.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, who do you think it was?
I think this is the dullest show ever.
Well, it's not dull for us. It means the world to us because we're as petty as it gets.
It certainly doesn't sound like it to me, being as you listened for 2 hours and then took the time to call. Hello. Oh, yes. You hung up. Jesus. Hello, Don and Mike.
Hello. I hear something.
Yeah.
Who do you think lied to us?
Definitely Jeremy. I'd like to see him swear on his mother's life in person where he can't hide behind the phone.
That's 8 votes for Jeremy.
All right. Hello, Don and Mike. Hello.
It's easy to hide behind a microphone, son.
Son.
Hello. Yeah, it's
we're quoting Mike Ditka.
Hello.
How old are you?
18.
What year were you born?
1980.
No, that would make you,
Yeah, and he hung up. He's gone. There you go. All right.
Hello.
Yeah.
Don and Mike.
I feel such a feeling of satisfaction when I do that.
Hello.
Hey, it's got to be Jeremy.
Why?
Oh, just because he doesn't sound convincing enough, because Al and I think put forth a very good effort.
Jeremy moving ahead now, and I don't mean that in a good way. Yeah. He's moving ahead in the guilt column.
Hello, Don and Mike.
Definitely Jeremy. He's looking for a glass desk.
All right. Hello, Don and Mike.
Hello, is this Don and Mike?
Yes, sir.
Yes, are they taking calls about...
Yes, who do you think did it? You're on the air right now.
Well, I don't think so, but I would like to say that 220 years ago...
Let me prove it to you. Hello. It's Don and Mike.
Hello.
Guy will get it to listen to himself be hung up on.
There
now.
You go.
Hello, you're on the air. Who do you think lied to us?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, you're on the air.
Oh, howdy.
Yes, duh.
We love your show, but get a clue because this isn't really entertaining anymore at all.
Well, you know what I'd say then? You have a right to turn off the radio.
We never turn your station off.
Well, then do it. I don't care. Listen, when you're getting your lobotomy, when you're on an airplane, do you tell the pilot how to fly? What approach to use? Well, then you're a big pain in the ass and you wouldn't fly on my airplane.
That's right, and you were too stupid to realize that we picked up the phone.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
If you don't like it, turn off the stinking channel. This is our lives. This is real.
And you bet we're petty. And we got to take care of this desk issue. We want to know what our listeners think.
Of course you do. But if you take another poll to see who cares anymore, I bet you'd find out most people don't.
Well, then why don't you be a big man and turn the radio off?
Because I love the show.
Then don't call and bust my balls about it. Listen, you know what this is like? Do you think somebody would call up Jay Leno and say, listen, Jay, I don't like the direction your show is going. Would you ever do that? No. Would you do that? Of course you wouldn't. You know what you do?
His phone number.
You turn right. You know what? I got to get an unlisted number. No more calls from the listeners. I want to be insulated from now on. From all the insulating listeners. All the insulting listeners.
I'm not insulting.
Yeah, that's very insulting.
Yes, we are both insulted by that. The desk is an important issue because we are petty and we must take care of it.
And so what if we have to devote 4 hours to finding out who around here is lying to us?
Well,
you know, you want to know a secret? Let me tell you a secret here. When this is resolved, whoever the listeners vote for, we're going to tie the other guy behind our car with a rope around his waist and drag him through Fairfax, Virginia. So it's important.
This is our lives. This is not a stupid bit we're doing.
That's right.
No, I know. I didn't say it was stupid.
It's principle. It's principle. Now, you're slowing us down. We got to take some votes to find out who's guilty.
The show was slowed down about 2 hours ago.
Then listen. Why have you wasted 2 hours?
I'm working.
Then why? Then go do your job. I'm trying to do mine.
Come on. I think I hear that little beeper going off. The French fries are ready.
You guys are great.
Or even better, I tell you what, even better.
You better be careful because if you let those French fries burn, Mom's going to fire you.
Why don't you just go to a small station and work your way up the ladder the way we had to? Then you can have your own radio show.
And you don't have to worry about those pimples. You just don't have them on your face anymore. They work their way down to your butt.
Hello, Don and Mike show.
Don.
Yes.
It would have to be Alan.
All right, why?
Because he's even trying to convince himself because he keeps coming in saying the same thing over and over and over again.
That's another vote for Alan.
Thank you. Now, what is the total? What
total is 10 votes for Jeremy. We have a total of 5 votes for Alan.
Well, then that should be it.
50% margin there that Jeremy is the guilty party.
That's it.
And, of course, he will now have to be destroyed.
Well, tomorrow. He'll be back in town tomorrow.
As soon as he takes care of that paying for the desk issue, he will be destroyed.
We'll have to bring him in here tomorrow.
That's right.
Which will mean that more people won't like the show tomorrow because we'll be continuing it tomorrow.
Well, some things have to be taken care of.
Here's the facts. We love listening to you in the Channel 8 newsroom, but shut up about the desk already.
Okay.
We'll donate one to settle the issue.
Mm-hmm.
This comes from WMTW Channel 8.
Well, it's good that the TV folks are listening and enjoying the show. And, you know, all those people they're calling saying, shut up about the desk. Well, they're listening to us right now.
Yeah. You know, can I tell you what I do if the show's on that I don't like?
Thank you for calling Channel 8.
I turn it off.
Their business hours are 8 to 5 weekdays.
Oh, God.
If you know your party's extended...
You know why they don't turn it off? I'll tell you why they don't turn it off.
Message.
I know, because it's good. It's riveting.
It's by name.
I mean, you never know. It could erupt into a fist fight at any moment. Yeah. That's why.
For news, weather, or sports,
yes.
Press 4. For news, press 1. For weather...
We want to speak to Richard Rhodes.
The Rose Man. The Roser. The Man of Rose Stinia.
He's the man who said those facts.
Oh. Life is a rose. Some say love.
Oh, God, please. Please, no.
All right, hold on. Let me try another number, I guess.
Yeah, calling up from a cornfield out here in Maine. It seems one of these alien spaceships just landed, but you're too busy listening to Don and Mike to take the call.
Sending faxes up. Tell us to stop talking about the desk.
All right, I'm trying another number now for WMTW.
News.
Perfect.
Do you have all the numbers there, Don?
Mm-hmm.
I said, do you have all the numbers there for the...
Yes.
I mean, every single one of them?
Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes.
Welcome to 1-800-ASK-4-ASS, the only party line you need for good butt action.
Okay.
He was already dialing it when I asked.
Sure I was.
You were one step ahead of me.
We're sorry. You have dialed a number which cannot be reached from your calling area.
All right, well, who knows? Hey, Channel 8 up in Portland, Maine, you can eat me too. You know what I'm saying? Worry about the news.
And send a crew down here to do a feature piece on the program.
On how bad a show we had today. How about that be the lead story? Good evening. I'm Net Nutley. This afternoon, Don and Mike spent 2.5 hours on their national radio show talking about a desk. We all thought it really sucked, however. We listened to every second of it, and because of that, we're unable to give you the news on WMTW Channel 8.
Good night.
I'm done with it now.
I am done, yes. I am. It is concluded. And the bottom, we should point out, that I think this really got de-emphasized.
Lost in the shuffle
that they are going to pay for the desk, and we're not. And that's a victory for us. The victory remains for us, total victory. Stay tuned, though, because I don't trust either one of those guys, and I will believe that that desk is paid for when I see it.
See, the thing is, we got to keep working with both of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And all we know is one of them, maybe both of them,
right,
are so bold as to lie about something as inconsequential as a desk that involved members of their family.
And unmovable, either one of them. They just didn't budge a bit.
Okay. Quick commercial break. I'm glad you liked that.
I did. I liked it a lot.
We'll come right back and we'll recap. After this.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
We are live from Las Vegas. The 21st hour of the national segment of the 1994 Jerry Lewis Labor Day Muscular Dystrophy Association Telethon. Here's the man of this and any hour, the national chairman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Lewis!
Hi.
I said to Debbie before that I find it odd that my tears are rolling from a good afternoon. Hi, Jer, and they come out. And I realized that I am so deeply touched by all of your love and all of the good stuff you've done for me. If I get through this, I'm buying everybody a car. And as Louis told me, slowly. Wait a second. There was just one guy I forgot that's on the stage. I think I should recognize him or he'll never come here again. The king and the leader of my support, Ed McMahon.
The Don and Mike Show. Making your penis feel young. Don and Mike.
Now let's welcome, I've been pronouncing the last name incorrectly, Sean
Levy.
Levy.
Hi, Sean, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you guys?
Great. I was saying Levy as in Eugene Levy.
From Second City TV.
That's right.
An enormous talent.
Sean joining us today from Portland, Oregon. Thank you for being on the show. Talented author. I have a copy of his latest book right here, and as you can see,
It's a paperback. I mean, it's a hardback. It's right. A real one.
Yes, sir. One side of Jerry being serious, and the other side, of course, Jerry the Clown.
A couple of weeks ago, we had the guy on who had written the book about Larry King. His book was in a paperback edition and seemed a bit cheesier. This one actually has an index in it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm guessing, and as you can see, it's one of these books that has a bunch of asterisks, and when there is a fact that's given on the bottom of the page, an explanation as to where the fact was gotten is also provided.
Sean, it looks like a heck of a lot of research went into this book.
It was. It was about 2 years solid research, in addition to a lifetime of watching movies, which helped.
The name of Sean's book is A King of Comedy, The Life and Art of Jerry Lewis. Now, before we ask you about the book, and before we tell you our many fascinations with Jerry, can you explain to us how you started writing the book? Because the way we understand it, Jerry, was in on it with you up until a point when he dropped out of the process. Is that right?
Right. I introduced myself to Jerry through the mail, and he invited me to meet him. He owns a yacht that he keeps in San Diego. I went down there to see him, and we met and got along like gangbusters. We spoke for hours. He had nothing but kind things to say. He spoke to my wife and my mother about me in subsequent weeks. He called me and sent me things. When I went back to see him about 2 or 3 months later, he had a different disposition from the moment I arrived. Spent the afternoon or the portion of the afternoon that actually transpired sort of denigrating the press and asking me really blunt questions about my intentions, and he finally exploded and screamed and yelled at me a string of obscenities. And
was there any basis for this? I mean, did this come out of absolute left field, or had he found out that perhaps you were asking other people questions about him, or was this just completely unrelated to anything?
I think that Jerry has always had a very guarded attitude toward the press. And the second time we met, I asked him questions about less than pleasant things in his past. I asked about his relationship with Dean Martin back in the 50s. I asked about a period of time in the 70s when he didn't have any work. And he just blew up. He'd rather not talk about that, even if it means being rude to someone.
All right, three questions that I have for you about Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can talk about the book and open up the floor to the questions. The first question: is it true or not that Jerry wears a pair of socks once and throws them away?
Boy, it sure seems true. If it's not true, then a lot of people told me different.
I'll explain to you why we believe that to be true. We heard the story about 5 or 6 years ago from a limo driver.
And we were fascinated immediately.
This guy drove a limo in Vegas, and Jerry was in his limo.
Right.
And Jerry had changed his shoes or something in the car and left the socks behind with the monogrammed JL on each of them.
That's right.
The guy heisted the socks and air expressed them to us.
Oh, goodness.
We ended up, I think, auctioning the socks off for Children's Hospital.
A very nice tan. Actually, was it one sock? Or I think it was one sock.
I think it was just one we got.
A very nice tan Jerry Lewis sock with the monogram on it.
And we heard that he wears them once and then throws them away.
He has never laundered a suit or a shirt. And kept it. Those things always get passed on. When he went on tour in support of the Nutty Professor in 1963, they took along more than a gross of new socks for the 7 weeks.
Now, how many is that? Like
150-odd.
150-odd socks.
That would back up the story then that he wears the socks once.
All right, second question. About France.
Mm-hmm.
Do the people in France think he's a genius or not?
Well, a lot of French critics do. His movies have always been very popular there. In many cases, they've outperformed the American box office. The fact is, they have always had more of a taste for physical comedy. You know, there was a period in the United States in the 60s, 70s, 80s where it was considered lowbrow to take a pratfall. And now it's kind of chic again with Jim Carrey and whatnot. But Jerry was still doing that and couldn't find as appreciative a set of critics or an audience here as he did abroad.
Outside of their love of physical comedy, is there any other reason you give, maybe in the book or that you know of, that the French seem to be fascinated with Jerry?
What do they see in him that we don't?
Well, they started following him as a director right away, as soon as he started directing movies, and I think they rightly identified him as an important director of comedy. He's the first comedian since the silent era to direct himself. Later on, Mel Brooks, Woody Allen, many other people did it. But also, I think they look at Jerry, you know, with these a fresh pair of socks every minute of his life and that kind of infantile character that he plays and see it as a kind of version of the ugly American.
Yeah, but I said, why would he? See, here's the thing. I would think that they, well, maybe you got a point there about the ugly American. I was going to say, but as far as the socks go, if they admire Jerry because he changes his socks all the time, maybe my stereotypes are wrong, but aren't the French generally smelly themselves?
No. I think they see that as a typical example of American excess.
Ah, yes. Okay, so it's
the way we see a French a Frenchman roll his eyes and say, ooh la la, and think that's the typical Frenchman.
So in a nutshell, they like Jerry because he makes Americans look bad.
Well, yeah, he embodies a lot of things that are in the American psyche in their point of view.
Okay, and the last thing that I want to ask you, and then we can get into all the stuff with the book. What about the movie that Jerry made in the 70s about the clown and the Nazi concentration camp?
Jerry made a film in 1973 that's never been released and will never be released for a lot of financial and legal reasons. It's called The Day the Clown Cried, and it's about a clown in Auschwitz who was used by the Nazis to lead children into the gas chambers.
Ah, jeez.
I know. It's incredible poor taste, but the script actually received a lot of respect as it made its way around Hollywood.
Any basis in fact with this script at all?
Pardon me?
Any basis at all in fact with this?
Well, you know, there's some dispute about that. Jerry says that it's based on truth. The woman who wrote the screenplay says she made it up. Jerry changed a lot of things in her screenplay, so it's hard to say who's talking about what.
Now, what is this movie that has never been seen?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a comedy?
Well, it has comic elements. I mean, we start off. I've read the script. It starts with the clown doing his shtick, and then he does some shtick about Hitler. And he winds up. He's not a Jew. He winds up in a concentration camp as a kind of a political prisoner. So there is some comic stuff in it. Harry Shearer, the comedian, has seen the film, and he's quoted as saying it's like seeing a black velvet painting of Auschwitz. It's perfectly realized bad taste.
Man, and a tremendous embarrassment for Jerry, right?
And a huge financial fiasco. His producer stopped sending money to the Swedish studio where it was being filmed, partly through the production. And Jerry wound up financing it out of his own diminishing fortune at the time. And all that money went, you know, nowhere.
How did Harry Shearer manage to see a copy of that?
In the 70s, Harry was chummy with a guy who used to work as an assistant director on the telethon. And it was at a time where Jerry was still trying to get the financing and the approval together to distribute the film. So he showed it to a few people, including, by the way, the screenwriter who is said to have fled the screening room in tears.
Oh, man.
Jeez. And now, did you ask Jerry about this movie? Did you get to ask him?
Indeed, that was the last thing I asked him.
And what was his response?
His response was to scream and yell a bunch of swear words at me and pretty much bring an end to our collaboration.
Oh, my God. So that was it. So obviously, this is the hot button for Jerry, this movie.
If you don't have a quarter and a fireworks machine handy, you can always get a rise out of someone by asking Jerry that question.
Wow. Now, do you write about that in your book?
Oh, sure. There's an epilogue that...
Oh, hold on. Let me go to the epilogue.
Everything that he and I had to do with one another personally.
I see. Epilogue, J and I.
It only seems fair.
Okay, hold on. Here's Jerry Lewis to the author, 1993. Quote, "You know what kills me more than anything? I don't give an S what they write. The thing that kills me is that they come with a disguise. That's what kills me. Why don't you just come and tell me you want to do a rip piece? I'll give you all the material you want. You want to rip me? I'll give you S that's real. That I'm guilty of. That'll make great reading. Why the F would you have to make up anything? Putz, ask me. I'll give you the S that you won't believe that no one's ever written. As long as it's real and it's true, it's okay with me. I don't care how I come off, as long as it's the truth." That was in 1993. And you talk.
That's kind of interesting that he's actually saying that to you. In a way, it sounds like maybe he's giving a blessing to someone to write a book about him.
You know, there's something. I mean, the cover of the book shows it. There's something ambivalent about this guy through and through. And his attitude toward me was, "Get out of my sight. I don't want to ever see you again."
Oh.
But then he would tell people it was okay to talk to me.
Can I just say something here?
Mm-hmm.
That passage I just read, that was marvelous.
we have a bunch of Jerry tapes that we play all the time.
Yeah, it's an undying fascination with Jerry that we have on this show.
Here's Jerry with MC Hammer.
Did you guys see MC Hammer earlier?
Yeah.
He's going to be back. He was so hot.
He's marvelous.
You know,
Jerry, who doesn't even know who MC Hammer is, he's marvelous. Listen, here's the part that Sean was just telling us about. I've skimmed through the epilogue of the book. The second time I met with Jerry on his yacht was early 1993, early in July, and it was as distinct from our first meeting as could be. I had used up a lot of my softball questions last visit, and I decided to speak more directly with him and ask him about specifics, about the way his work was resembled, about the split of Martin and Lewis, about Abby Greshler. Who's that?
It was his first manager.
The Arthur Marx book, his inactivities in the 70s, the day the clown cried. It was a risk, but I knew in broaching these subjects, I'd give him a chance to define our relationship once and for all. Were we going to be honest collaborators, or was I just a... Activities in the 70s, the day the clown cried. It was a risk, but I knew in broaching these subjects, I'd give him a chance to define our relationship once and for all. Were we going to be honest collaborators, or was I just a bright youngster who would be told and allowed to say only good things? I got my answer quick enough. I used the word spastic to characterize his onstage body language. It provided the first outburst of the morning. Quote, the word spastic is terrible. Some effing writer who didn't take the time to watch the work titled my work. Okay. I asked about the comics who charged that Jerry borrowed bits from them. One in particular, Catskill stand-up Gene Balos, drew a lengthy, hostile response. Quote, and now keep in mind, this is a guy, who's heard of this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody heard of this guy? He's a nobody, right?
40 years, yeah.
Jerry Lewis says, quote, he's the biggest joke in show business. His name is a joke. Gene Balos had every chance to be a big comic if he would have used his head, but he didn't. I wouldn't take anything from Gene Balos, unless I was in biology class. No unkindness meant.
Wow, so he harbors these animosities for long periods of time, obviously.
Oh, yeah, he's a great one for vendettas.
Oh, now listen to this. Hold on, here's another quote from Jerry. What do you want to do, a Kitty Kelly book? Just be careful, because I'll come after you. I still have a picture of your letter to me, what brought us together. I respected what you put in your letter. You better be just that.
Is he? Has he maintained those threats? Is he still threatening you?
Further on in that epilogue, it talks about him calling my publisher to denounce me about 6 or 8 months after this. But I haven't heard anything from him since, and have no idea if he's seen the book or...
Do you think he's the kind of guy that actually would be such a split personality that perhaps after he reads the book he might come around on it? Because, I mean, it's not all bad. You've got good and bad in the book.
It's not remotely all bad. I'm pleased that you say that, and everyone who's reviewed it so far has said so. I mean, the bad stuff is, of course, sensational to talk about, but the good stuff is all in there. And I don't know, my feeling has always been if he was a man and if he looked at it and he saw that this was his life and it was captured in pages, he would appreciate that. It remains to be seen whether he can take it that way.
Without giving away everything from your book, and I know that's why you're here to sell the book, and I'll tell you, folks, it's by a real publisher. I've checked it out. It's St. Martin's Press, so it's a real book. It'll cost you $25. What about him and Dean Martin? What did he have to say to you about his relationship with Dean Martin?
Well, you know, Jerry today talks about Dean with a lot of affection and respect, and their relationship wasn't always that way. When they first met, Jerry was about 18, and Dean was about 27, 28, and Jerry idolized Dean. Everyone who met Dean back then fell in love with him. And when Dean picked up Jerry as a partner, he couldn't have been happier. Jerry couldn't have been happier. As their relationship went on, Jerry became more and more ambitious. He wanted to write, direct, produce, work 36 hours a day. Dean was just like, you know, his image. He wanted to play golf, read comic books, and relax with a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And he ceded a lot of authority to Jerry, and Jerry sort of abused that passivity on Dean's behalf. And when they broke up in 56, after 10 years, Jerry and Dean hated one another. Jerry kept a scrapbook in his home in leather entitled Dean Shoots His Mouth Off. They didn't speak to each other seriously for almost 30 years. When Dean's son was killed in a plane accident, Jerry attended the funeral without, you know, telling the family he was coming. And they spoke on the phone after that, on and off, for the last decade of Dean's life.
You hear a lot about that. You hear about that reunion when he went to the funeral, that he went into a room and they had a heart-to-heart. How accurate is that, and how emotional was that conversation that they had?
As far as the accuracy, I can only take the testimony of the people who were there, and mm-hmm. people say it happened. I imagine, and then, you know, as far as what they might have talked about, if Dean Martin was on the phone for 20 minutes, that was probably a lot for, you know, a week for him. He was a very reclusive man. And if he spoke to Jerry for a while, I'm sure they really opened up to one another and you know, sort of made those years of animosity melt away.
How jealous do you think Jerry is of a guy like Jim Carrey?
Well, he's got to be some. But Jerry had his day. I mean, in the early 60s, there was no bigger star in any medium. Jerry was the highest paid actor in movies. He was the highest paid actor in TV. He got paid so much money to act in TV, he would have been one of the top two or three people today without even translating the money. He made $8 million a year for 5 years on NBC, or rather ABC, but he paid so little attention to the show that it got canceled half a season in. He stood to make $40 million. So he had his golden age, and I think he's got to feel lucky that someone whose act so resembles his is successful with it today.
And what about the telethon? Well, what is the status of the telethon? You hear all the stories about the people now, they're protesting him, that he really doesn't care about the cause. Can you tell us what really is going on with him and the telethon?
Well, I'll tell you, if that was the only thing Jerry Lewis ever did in his life, his work for muscular dystrophy, then he'd be considered probably a saint. He's raised $1.5 billion in nearly 50 years. He works every day of his life with the organization, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and with thousands and thousands of families who are stricken with some form of neuromuscular disease. And he is whole hog behind his work. But he makes a Jerry Lewis thing out of it. You know, Mother Teresa doesn't call it the Mother Teresa Hospital. Jerry calls it the Jerry Lewis Telethon. That rubs a lot of people the wrong way, as does his insistence on referring to people in wheelchairs as kids.
Mm.
We live in an age now where a Republican president signed the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Civil Rights Act for the handicapped, and Jerry Lewis, who still in some people's mind makes fun of handicapped people in his act, still refers to these people as kids, and a lot of people find that really disturbing and demeaning.
Has anybody tried to approach him on that, or has he remained inflexible over the years about that?
They have. There's a group that calls itself Jerry's Orphans, which is made up of former poster children who don't want Jerry associated with the telethon any longer because of his insensitivity. There are other groups like that. Jerry will have nothing to do with them. He's as awful with them as he was with me. However, the Muscular Dystrophy Association hierarchy has listened to these people, and the telethons, whether Jerry cares to admit it or not, have sort of de-emphasized the pity approach and the sort of exploitative use of children. They're much more aware of treating mature people with neuromuscular disease as regular adults.
How many times would you imagine, during the many telethons that Jerry has done, how many times would you think that he and his showbiz cronies have used the phrase, "My friend"?
No, Jerry's phrase is "ladies and gentlemen." There's an anecdote in my book about Ed Sullivan seeing him when he was a young, he was a pantomimist. His first act, it was Milli Vanilli, but deliberately for laughs. Uh-huh. And he also emceed in nightclubs. And Ed Sullivan came to see him when Ed Sullivan was a Broadway columnist. And they counted Jerry as saying "ladies and gentlemen" about 46 times in one evening. And Sullivan, on a napkin, wrote down a bunch of synonyms that Jerry could use instead.
Oh. Well, see, because here's where we're coming from. We've got a tape here.
Sammy Davis Jr.,
my friend.
Jerry, my friend.
My friend.
For you, my friend.
My friend.
Sammy Davis Jr.,
my friend.
Jerry, my friend.
My friend.
For you,
my friend.
Sammy Davis Jr.,
my friend.
Jerry, my friend.
My friend.
Should we consider the my friend bit? I mean, that seems to be the overused deal on the telephone.
But it's actually "ladies and gentlemen."
Yeah. Well, at least that was back then. I guess "my friend," I mean, you've got the tape, right? In 1985, Jerry, for 1 week, had a syndicated TV talk show. And his opening night, he closed by looking into the camera and saying, "I only wish for you the greatest wish that can be wished, to have people in show business as your friends."
Wow. That shows you how in touch with reality he is. Sean, thank you. Listen, we've got to go. The name of Sean Levy's book is King of Comedy, The Life and Art of Jerry Lewis.
It looks great. It looks like a fabulous book.
Yeah. It's a real book. We endorse it heartily. And thank you for coming on a program that is as ragtag as ours to discuss it.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care, Sean.
Goodbye, my friend.
Well, that's neat. That's good. You know, it's not an all slam piece, but I tell you, I think I would have liked to see the Jerry rave out.
Sean Levy, my friend.
My friend.
Be right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.
Okay. The Don and Mike Show.
Always the exception to every rule ever made. Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
Are you there, honey?
Yes, my boo-boo.
Okay. My wife is very busy. Very busy socialite. She doesn't have much time to talk today to me.
Sorry.
Ah, the socialite is on the line.
You don't pay me enough to sit by the phone.
All right, I want to run through a bunch of weekend stuff with you.
Yes, my darling.
You think you've got enough time to go through the weekend?
As soon as Bart shows up, I'm taking off, but he's not here right this second.
Okay, beautiful. You know, and when you have a kid that's 14, that's basically what your life is.
You're basically waiting for the kid.
Sit around, wait for him, so that we can take him to his next appointment.
Right.
Take him to his next sports event, take him to his next dance,
right.
Take him to his next study group.
And by the time that's all over, you know, you're still, you know, uptight about your kids when they're adults, and then you die.
So listen, on Saturday...
Yeah.
I'll give you the weekend in a nutshell. Saturday, I'm very tired all day because, you know, we were up late on Friday night. And
right.
Plus, my wife didn't get home till 3 o'clock in the morning because
yeah.
She was out with all you other gals.
And what were you ladies doing anyway?
We had a wonderful time.
I heard.
So Saturday, there's no doubt about it, I had a little logie on Saturday. And Frida kept saying to me, let's do something. Because my son was going out, some friends on Saturday night, going a little get together.
Right.
And she said, let's do something. Frankly, I was not motivated to do something. So I was trying to think of something she'd want to do. I said, okay, let's go to the mall.
Right.
Yeah. And then here's the first lie that I hear this weekend.
It's Frida, not a lie.
Frida
you
says,
don't know me one little bit.
She says, I don't like to go shopping.
I hate shopping.
Please. She says, I need a vacuum cleaner. I said, well, listen.
Oh, there's a...
Fantastic. Let's go buy a new vacuum
there's
cleaner.
There's a whoopee time.
So we go through this back and forth, back and forth. Finally, we go to the movies. And we're going to go see the movie that you recommended, Election. Okay?
Okay. All right.
We get to the theater Saturday night, about a half hour before the show. Damn thing is sold out.
Ooh.
Really? Sold out. Election
wow.
Sold out. So we went to see Entrapment instead.
Right?
Yeah. Mucho good movie.
Oh, good.
And another movie that I'll say, better than Star Wars.
Ah, very good.
Entrapment. Wow. Very good movie. I was very happy about that. And I'm feeling good because I'm thinking, you know, here I am, out with my wife,
right,
showing her a good time, even though, you know, I'm dragging ass.
Sure.
Got home, everything's cool. Sunday, took her out, bought her the vacuum cleaner.
Ah, the one she wanted?
Yeah.
Good.
Went to Best Buy, I said, honey, splurge, buy the Dirt Devil.
I get the good one.
Because, you know, she stood there for 20 minutes looking
right.
at these damn things.
Well, we have a lot of dog hair, and I wasn't a good one, but, you know, there's some really expensive vacuums out there, so we got, you know, the mid-range vacuum.
So she, of course, is standing there for 20 minutes, and by the time I got done looking at the videos and the video games and the CDs, I just went over and I said, listen, here's the one we're getting.
Oh, yep. There he is. Oh, okay, that's all right. I'll tell him to hurry up. Go ahead.
How can he be calling me?
But no, that's not him on the phone. That coincidentally, the phone's ringing, and he's driving up.
Oh, all right. Well, listen, go ahead.
Well, no, that's all right. I'm on the portable phone.
Oh, all right. Then I'll save the dinner party. I just want to know what was going on last
night. Hey, Bart, you got tennis in 5 minutes, baby. Come on.
All right, I just want to know what was going on last night. A big part of my weekend revolved around watching the Sacramento Kings game on Sunday night.
Right.
Okay? There's no doubt about it
right.
that the weekend was planned around me watching this basketball
Thank
game
you,
on Sunday night.
Yes, we're listening to you.
I'm glad someone is, Mike.
Just wanted to let you know that. I mean, it was just, you know, for a moment.
So we did all this other stuff that my wife wanted to do with the preconceived thought that at 5:30 on Sunday,
right.
I want to be in front of the TV to watch the Sacramento Kings.
So nothing is really planned.
Right. But we go out to dinner, we buy the vacuum equipment, we do all this crap, We got home. I'm sitting in front of the tube watching the game,
right.
Watching them get their asses kicked, hoping that they'll come back. She's outside. She's doing yard work outside and other junk. At about 7:30 last night, just as Sacramento is clawing their way back into the game.
A beautiful evening in Washington. It was dusk. Temperature perfect, 72 degrees.
Here is the total. This is the double standard of all time.
Right.
Because I'm constantly saying to my wife, let's do it now. Let's make love now. And I'm always getting from her, no, not now.
Right.
Now is not a good time. Wait until 10:30 tonight. And she never wants to do it on a spontaneous note. She comes to me and she says, you know, it's so beautiful outside. Let's take a blanket and let's go outside right now. And keep in mind, it's like, it's daylight and stuff outside. And
it's dusk.
My kid.
It's a very secluded spot.
My kid. Hold on.
Oh,
yeah.
Hush, sorry.
My kid is sitting right in the next room. And
what?
I said to her, are you? I said, are you crazy? First off, I'm watching this very important basketball game. Second off,
very
I think I just heard Bart go.
Like, you couldn't take a break.
I said, second, it's light outside. Third, our kid is walking around. You want me to just go outside and bone you outside?
I think I just heard him in the background go, ew.
Yeah, but he even told his dad he had marital obligations.
And then here's the worst part. So I say to Frida, absolutely not. No, listen, I said, I'm in the middle of doing everything. I don't want to go outside. It's daylight outside. I said, no, absolutely not. Well, the next thing, you know, she tells, now how healthy is this? She tells Bart. So the next thing, my son comes in and he says, Dad, take Mom out. And I said, do you know what she wants me to do outside? And he said, yeah.
Oh,
and I said,
no.
And then I looked at Frida and I said, listen. Now, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, forget about it. No way. So I'd just like to know what was going through your mind last night.
Two glasses of wine were going through my mind. We had come back from a lovely dinner. I had had a couple glasses of wine. It was a beautiful night out. I was feeling lusty towards my handsome husband.
You must have been bombed, baby.
And some men would be thrilled to have their wives.
Honey, it's 7:30 on a Sunday night. You know, the neighbors could see us, for goodness sake.
It was a very secluded spot I found for us.
So I said, why don't we just go up to the bedroom? Oh, no. We have to go outside.
Under the stars or under the soon-to-be stars.
To be with nature.
Yeah, so you promised me this morning, and you didn't. You said after you took Bart to school this morning.
Yeah, and you didn't believe me when I told you that last night either.
Yeah. All right.
I don't want to have sex outside.
Yeah,
I want to have sex in our bedroom.
Some people do. Some people do have a little bit of creativity.
Honey, I'm all for creativity. Let's just be creative in the bedroom.
Okay, you tell me how to be creative, and you tell me what you would do that's creative.
Bring in like a branch or something.
You won't wear costumes.
Costumes.
You won't
play act.
I just want to have straight sex with you. That's all.
You won't do it. Yeah, but don't tell me you'll be creative because you won't even let me put music on.
You know what being creative is? Doing it at a time unlike 10:30 every night. Which is our time.
Yeah. All right. I'm willing to change the time if you're willing to change the setting.
Since when? What is wrong with our bedroom?
What's wrong with 10:30 at night? Come on, Bart.
You guys used to do it like in closets and things like that.
Yeah, brushes. Didn't
you? Oh, shut up, Mike.
I'm sorry.
No, we have. We've done it in closets and stuff. I would do it in the closet with you.
Oh, whoopee. You know, the different rooms, but I'd like it to be a different atmosphere.
You're going through some kind of change again.
No.
This is like some chemical thing with you.
No, I just thought it was a good idea, spontaneous, that I knew you wouldn't go for it. You never do.
All right, because I don't like sex.
No, you don't. You are too Catholic.
Funny.
You don't like... When we were married, we did it outside one time, and you were freaked the whole time. Do you remember?
No, when did we... Where, by Lake Needwood?
No, that we didn't do it then.
Lake Needwood.
Was on Assateague Island.
I know where Lake Needwood is.
Yeah, in Rockville. Yeah, we used to go make out there when we were dating.
No.
Very romantic spot.
No, we did it on the dunes.
I remember. It sucked.
And you were freaked. Right, because you couldn't relax.
Were there sand fleas?
No, me.
Outside, man. You know, we got a nice... And plus, my son is... You know, once you brought him into the equation...
Yeah, I don't blame you there.
You lost any chance.
Well,
you lost any chance.
No chance. Let's be honest. All right, next time, if he's not around, do I have a chance?
If there's not an important basketball game on, perhaps.
All right, good.
You
Does
know
it have to be no sports season?
Honey, you know I've been waiting all weekend for this one game. All weekend I've been waiting for one game to come on.
What if I let you bring a like a little radio?
Oh, come on, please. All right, goodbye.
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 Do you have a shed?
No, we don't have a shed.
Yeah, get you sure. Shed.
She says, let's go outside right now. Here she says, do me outside. I said, are you crazy?
That's a bad time, though. I mean, for
7:30
on Sunday
night.
You're on a couch somewhere. Most American males, seriously, at that time, are on a couch, you know, in that download mode.
I said, if you really want to do it, let's go upstairs. You know, I'll knock your brains out. And she said, no. Outside, it's so romantic outside. I said, what are you crazy? And then next thing you know, my son's coming, and he goes, hey, come on, Dad, do it.
I don't blame you there.
And I said, Elizabeth, get out of this room. Get out right now.
That's it. We share the Catholic thing on that. Stop it. Okay, all bets are off.
Right, and then she starts the big guilt thing, when she goes, well, if the Sacramento Kings are more important than my happiness. I said, yes, they are. Pardon me for being a bad husband and father, because I don't want to take you outside where the next door neighbors are going to see me boning you out by the tree in the backyard.
For goodness sake. You know, there are certain neighbors that actually would do that just in the hopes that their neighbors would see them.
Buzz and Marcia, who I thought of immediately.
There's a danger element, sure, that makes it exciting. I've never lived in a neighborhood like that, but I know that they exist.
Charlie Broyhill, hold on. Take Leah Remini on our next break.
Okay.
She's on the phone. Oh,
he did that.
I didn't know you were in here.
He's not getting any ducks when you looked at the screen.
You wrote it on the computer. Leah is on the phone. Do you want her now?
Right.
One more break. I'll go right to break here.
Righto.
Okay, get out of here.
There he goes, Denny's boy.
The other thing I want to tell you about.
Yes.
The other thing about this weekend. On Sunday, before we went, you know, through this thing at my house, we went out to dinner.
Right.
Because my wife was in this big thing. Let's do something. So we went out. We bought the vacuum cleaner. We ran all the errands. We go out to dinner. We go to a restaurant by our house. We're sitting down, just me and Frieda and Bart, right? We're having a nice meal. Sitting there, waitress comes up. Now, she's already taken our drink orders and stuff and taken our food order. She comes up, and she comes back over. She goes, excuse me, but you're Don from Don and Mike, right? And I go, yeah, yes, I am. And she says, oh, I never listen.
I hate that.
And I'm looking at her like,
I hate that. That happens too.
You know, and I didn't say anything to this waitress. Like,
right.
Well, then why did you approach me if you don't listen?
I know. What is the reason for that?
She says, and it wasn't. I listen sometimes. And she says, I never listen. And so I just smiled. I looked at her and I was like,
that's good. It's good that you spent.
Thank you.
What is the point then? That's what I don't understand.
You know, so thank
no
you.
Other.
That will be reflected in your tip, you you dumb bitch.
Uh-huh.
Except the problem is, I had to still leave her a big tip because I said, "Freddie, she knows who I am."
I know. Right.
Now if you don't leave her a big tip, she's going to say I'm a dick. But what do I? Cause she doesn't listen anyway.
Well, what the hell did she say that for? That's what I don't understand.
I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
I don't know. Hi, you're Don and Mike, right? I go, well, yeah. I don't listen.
You know what that
might
be?
That's the next word out of her mouth. I never listen.
I think I know what that is. I think I know exactly what that is. That is somebody else who is working there that is maybe waiting on another table or working in the joint that sees you and says, find out if that is
tip
you know,
her off.
Well, still, you could be a little brighter if you're the waitress.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, you could.
You could just not say anything. You could just say,
not realize that she has insulted you.
Right. Well, that's great. Why don't you go spit my food now?
Hey, it make me feel better.
Thank you. I'm going to leave you a one-penny tip.
I never listen.
So, like, during the whole dinner, I was steaming on that. I said to my wife and my son, I said,
sure.
You believe
me
that?
Off.
I said, do you believe that? Are you Don from Don and Mike? I never listen.
I know.
You know, we should get up and walk out of this restaurant right now. Oh, come on.
Did anybody else from the restaurant come over to say hi or anything like that?
No. Not a soul. Just her. And then she didn't say anything else about it, like, for the whole rest of the meal. And I'd like to point out, she effed up the order. I asked specifically for no baked potato, and I asked for a Caesar salad. I got a house salad with side dressing, and she brought me a baked potato.
And you still had to tip her big, so the reputation of being a bad tipper wouldn't get out there.
Oh, man. Right, Buzz.
Right. When you have total anonymity, you can leave whatever tip you want.
Right.
This is the Don and Mike Show.